sun is dying, mankind faces extinction. 7 years ago, the Icarus Project sent a mission to restart the sun, but that mission was lost before it reached the star.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 94 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it's hot in here, isn't it?
It's bloody boiling.
It's like a Nelly song.
I'd love to open the window, but then we'd have street noise, so we're just going to have to put up with it, I'm afraid.
Who doesn't love a sweatbox?
Speaking of hot, what's coming up on the show today?
Seamless.
We've got a hot topic, which is our top three romantic on-screen couples. So that's going to get very steamy, I believe, when we're talking about the chemistry and the lust and the love and the romance.
Yes, on that tack, can we try and not be vulgar this week? Because on the last episode, it was disgusting.
Oh, yeah. It was an absolute filth cast.
Gush cast.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to try harder for you, Ben. Harder.
No, don't.
Ruined already. Ruined. Gemma. Yep.
Our main review for this episode is A Quiet Place.
What?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Weren't you supposed to be doing Jumanji 2 or whatever it's called?
Why did we waste a tenner going to see Rampage? And it was a waste.
I don't think I had signal on my phone. But anyway, we're going to be reviewing A Quiet Place on this episode.
It's a good job we've seen that as well, isn't it?
See how we listen, though. That's the good thing about this. We see tweets, we see Facebook comments, we see emails. Why aren't you reviewing A Quiet Place? You really need to see it. We listen. We did it.
We did.
And here we are.
And our rewatch this time round is Danny Boyle's sci-fi thriller, Sunshine. I'm tremendously excited by all this because it's one that we've mentioned a lot on the show but never really delved into.
We're going to sink our teeth into it.
It adds to the whole warmth in the air today, romance, heat.
See what you've done there?
It's all synergy.
Synergy.
And on that note, we've also got internal sunshine.
Internal?
Internal?
That's the prequel. We've got our second round of a fucking shit show. We've got our second round of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
We're not even 5 minutes in.
We're 2 minutes in. How bad is that? But yeah, so it's all sunshine related today.
And speaking of happy MMDs, this time around we're going to be talking about our favourite performance from Robert Downey Jr. Yeah,
I was trying to think of something sun related, but no. I can't do it.
Has he got a son?
Probably.
Maybe.
Probably a lot.
And of course, we'll finish off the show with all your usual goodies. We'll have listener questions. We'll have pop culture recommendations of the week. All that kind of goodness. Before we move on, though, I just want to mention something. Something else that was hot. Shit hot, you might say.
Shit hot.
It was the recent Secret Cinema event for Blade Runner.
Yes.
All three of us have attended this, but I've got a feeling we're going to gush over this quite heavily, so I don't want to do it now. Shall we save it for the outro?
Oh, yeah, God. Keep them waiting.
I'm going to be swimming.
Hang on.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Didn't say anything. Just said I was going to swim.
And you just said
here.
Gush as well. Oh, so.
Yeah. Well, that can have non-sexual connotations, Mark. Holy hell.
Not during my school years, it didn't.
Right. Enough of this. So we'll be doing that in the outro. One thing I did want to discuss in the intro, though, is very recently we've started to see tweets going out for a lot of our loyal listeners who've been voting for us in the British Podcast Awards.
Yeah. Hell of a lot, to be honest. My phone battery died twice yesterday. Yeah.
I had to charge my phone again.
It's fantastic. There's kind of like a listener's choice category, isn't there? All the other categories I think you have to put yourself forward for and so on, and we're too lazy for that kind of business. But this one, people can write you in, and we've been getting a hell of a lot of response, and we want more.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you dudes, but I want to fucking win it.
Yeah, come on, let's be an award-winning podcast.
Ben, if I did want to vote, not myself, because I wouldn't put myself over in the own podcast, but what site would I go on?
You would go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote.
Ah, and then do I just literally type in skip to the end, put in my email address and name, and then hit submit?
Yeah.
That takes about 20 seconds.
It takes about 20 seconds, and it is your opportunity to finally get it right after Brexit and Trump.
Yeah. And we will do a speech and call out everyone that votes for us on our speech when we go up on Collector the Award.
That is not a guarantee.
Never going to happen. But that would be awesome, wouldn't it?
And I would imagine you could probably tell your friends about it, and then they can do the same thing.
Yep,
and they tell their friends, and then they tell their friends,
and so on.
Amazing.
And I'm not suggesting that you set up fake email accounts and do multiple votes. I'm not suggesting that.
No.
At any point. And I'm not suggesting that it's really easy to set up multiple Gmail accounts.
Mm-mm. And if you are at work and you have a separate email address for your company, I'm not suggesting you should use that and your home email address that counts as two votes. That would be awful.
No, then that would ultimately mean we would get more votes in our names.
And if any Russian hackers are listening who know how to work the system to our advantage. You know.
Facebook, if you're listening right now, old Marky boy.
We hear you.
Sort us out, dude.
Let's get started.
Is in the air.
Oh my God.
And it certainly is this episode, because our topic is our top three on-screen romantic couples. It is what it says on the tin, and I basically want to hear, Gemma, what have you got first for the top three this time round?
Oh my God, I just want you to talk through the whole episode sounding like that. So my first one. It's Mickey and Mallory Knox from Natural Born Killers.
Oh, I've got it too.
Yes! How could it not be in a top three? This is a completely unconventional romance. This isn't flowers. This isn't chocolates. This isn't like going down the drive-in and having a shake. No, my friend. No, this is a couple who are in love and bloody love murdering at the same time. It's, of course, Oliver Stone's film, which focuses on the satire, and I repeat, a satire about the media glorifying killers. I would say that we see this kind of stuff still happening in the media now. You know, we do see a lot of glorified murderers that are here, there and everywhere, but I think this completely takes it to a degree that is not seen. So I chose them because they're matched so perfectly in the most horrific of circumstances, and they're clearly made for each other. But what makes it really difficult is the fact that they kidnap, they murder. They murder for fun. They don't murder for a reason. The only time they have murdered for a reason, which was a mistake, was with the guy who took them in, with the rattlesnakes and the Indian. That was the only murder that they regret. But they are essentially two parts of the same soul. They're the yin to each other's yang. You even see that on their tattoos. And it's a twisted love story that shouldn't work. But when you're watching it, you have so much fun. You find yourself rooting for them. And I feel really morally wrong for rooting for a couple of murderers. Yeah. But when you see them go off in the distance in the caravan, they've got that life. They've got the kids. They're going to be traveling America into their new lives now. They're no longer murdering. But what a rush. What a rush.
You've gone bloody big on the first choice here.
Because it's Mickey and fucking Mallory Knox. Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis. Is there a more perfect couple? Anyway, enough from me, Ben. Come on. You've got much better things to say about these two kids than myself. Come on.
The couple that slays together stays together.
Yes!
You know what I mean? And you've said that they only kill for fun. I don't think that's strictly true. I think they also kill to protect one another. I think they're fiercely loyal and fiercely protective of one another, which starts with the death of Mallory's parents, of course.
Very true, yes.
And they go on like that throughout the film. One of the things I love about this is that she is just as crazy and vicious as he is. Often in films of this type, the woman is kind of a passenger. She's enthralled to a maniac guy, but she is just every bit as loony and murderous as he is, and that's why it works so well together. They're 100% dedicated to each other. And you're right, you do support them, even though they're doing something that is so evil and so abhorrent, you can't help but be on their side.
Remember at the beginning when she's just this tiny little dainty character?
Yeah.
And she's given like short, sharp jabs to that guy. She doesn't use a weapon.
Yeah.
She kills him with her own bare hands.
Yeah, she's an absolute badass. A terrifying, utterly terrifying badass. And it seems that the more they kill for one another, the more they fall in love. It's a very odd courtship.
Yeah.
It's an odd way to fall for one another, but they do.
I think it's a nice way to show your dedication to each other, how willing and how far you are to go for each other. I think it's a good way. It's one of the most, don't quote me on that, the success to marriage is how far you'll murder someone. But I do believe that it was one of my favourite rewatches we did. It was one of those ones that was just, it wasn't that long ago, it was about 6 months ago, wasn't it?
But it was my very first rewatch choice.
Oh, that's how you leave an impact.
That's over a year then.
Exactly, yeah.
I have no concept of time anymore. But an amazing film, an amazing start. I don't know how I'm going to follow this, if I'm honest
with you. Good luck.
I'll follow that then with Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling in La La Land.
It's on my list too.
Brilliant. Sebastian and Mia. So I don't like talking about this because I believe if I met Ryan, our chemistry would be stronger than these two. I really do. Like, we would just connect instantly. We'd look at each other.
Mark Gosling would dance.
Let's be honest about it. Crazy Stupid Love was a great film. Those two, you could tell, were going to be great together.
Yeah.
I've not actually seen, is it Gangster Squad?
It is.
I've never seen that.
Not a good film.
No, not really.
But this is the icing on the cake for me. The whole film basically gives a nod to the golden age of cinema. It felt like an old Hollywood couple, which I've not seen on screen for a long time. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't some sort of, you know, 50 Shades of Grey style romance. It wasn't like a quickie up a bin outside Greg's.
Upper bin.
other food outlets that are available to have a shag up a bin outside.
I'm going to be sick.
Oh, I'm supposed to be trying to be nice and not so dirty.
You're like laying down the law.
Sorry. Oh, so.
Upper bin.
But I do genuinely feel that those two love each other. You must agree, Ben. You might not like the film, but you could see that both of them are having a blast on set. You can see that they genuinely have chemistry like no one else.
Yeah, their chemistry is electric, but yes, you're right, I don't like the film.
The sooner we can stop talking about La La Land, the better for Ben. But I love it, and the moment I saw it on screen, I was like, yeah, these two have got so much genuine love. I love it. From the start and the moment they meet, I'm rooting for them. And Damien did have to go and give us the whole swerve where we thought we were going to get the perfect ending and we didn't, because they both go off and have separate lives and don't have the perfect romance, which is a shame. Does he go and do? This is what you could have had, a bit like Jim Bowen on bloody Bullseye. Yeah. And you're sat there going, oh, okay, so this is how it would have all panned out, but it didn't. And it just kind of leaves you with a big gut punch and you're like, bastard.
He showed us the speedboat and he took it away. Son of a bitch. My favourite scene in La La Land is when they perform A Lovely Night. So you've got the backdrop of LA, the sky is purple, Emma Stone's wearing this beautiful yellow dress, Ryan Gosling looks dapper AF, and it just seems natural. The whole cohesion with the singing, the dancing, them interacting with each other when they're on the bench and they're doing that little sort of old Hollywood comedy dance routine, and it all feels completely natural. Nothing is faked whatsoever. They don't have like a gun against their heads going, you better shoot this film, otherwise we're going to lose some... a bit of moolah in the box office. But it's just wonderful how these two actors can both work together and make the magic happen. I can't talk about the end, it's so sad.
Magical's the word, I think, for this film. Yeah. Amazing. So Ben, what's your first choice?
This one won't surprise you at all. Go Big or Go Home. Leia and Han from the Star Wars saga.
He said it.
I think bookies would have paid out by now already on that one. If you hadn't got that,
yeah,
you're not my best mate. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm not your best mate anyway.
That's true.
It's the couple. They're a couple that are so perfect to each other that not even the cold reaches of space or the Galactic Empire could keep them apart, you know? He was this arrogant playboy who thought he knew better than anyone else. And he needs someone like Leia, a strong, self-possessed woman who could tame him and keep him in check.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he'd just be a prick or a type of thing. And it's a classic love story. It's a classic tale of two people who hated each other to begin with, but then that hate gradually turns to love. And come on, one of the greatest exchanges in film history is, I love you, I know.
Now, as a woman, I'd be all over him like a tramp on chips if he said that to me.
See, I thought you'd be like running a mile. I thought if I said just I know in that arrogant manner, you'd be like,
Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? It's the whole treat them mean, keep them keen. And it works. And then you're like, no, don't say that to me. No, tell me more. And then you end up running after him and he's got you by the hook.
You're getting dating advice today. Yeah.
Basically, if you treat us like crap, we'll come a-running. I can't speak for every woman.
There you go.
What have you been up to, Greg?
I know.
He's been an absolute bastard to me.
This is brutal.
Let's talk about their chemistry, though. The chemistry between Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford. Come on now.
I didn't pick it because it's kind of one of those ones where I didn't just want to have a duplicate with you, if I'm honest. Yeah. So it just goes without saying. The best thing about this is the fact that we got it again. So we saw the amazing chemistry on screen. How many years was it since then we had episode 7?
Oh, God.
30 years or so, yeah. And we had them again after all these years. And I think, don't get me wrong, you said, I remember this, Ben, you were saying that like Harrison Ford turned up and was just going along with it. You know, he did the paycheck and we were worried because then you kind of thought, well, we had Blade Runner. Is he going to give a shit as much? But I think when he was on screen with her, he gave a shit again. Yeah. For those few moments, not when he's running after gigantic meatballs and running around the place. That was a bit random.
Yeah.
But the other scenes when he was with her and the connection was there again, especially with Kylo Ren as well, you just saw it all and you thought, they've still got it. After 30 years, they've still got it.
It was as if they only met the other day. Mm. You know, that gap of time proved nothing. It was just, when a couple are meant to be together and act on screen and do this wonderful performance, it's meant to be. And this was always meant to be with both actors. They're just wonderful.
And it's a shame we'll never see it again because obviously, spoiler alert, his character's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And a weird spoiler alert, she's actually dead.
Yeah.
In case you missed that one.
Yeah, unless they do some CGI horrible
stuff.
Or what,
like the holograms you see at Coachella? No, thank you.
Or like they did with Leia in Rogue One.
Yeah. Still weird.
Nobody wants that.
No. If you're listening, JJ, which you probably are, don't do that in episode 9. We don't need to see him again. We're done.
Yeah, and if you are listening, JJ, it's britishpodcastawards.com/vote.
One retweet from him and we'd be sorted.
Yeah.
Wow, it's my second choice already. And do you know what? I'm going to give a big shout out to Dad. So Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn in Overboard.
Oh. Great choice.
The thing about this film is it's a beautiful, beautiful story. It's been done time and time again. We know what happens. We have this kind of snob that turns into a sweetheart. Many, many films have done it. But I think this time round, it's done with soul and heart. And I'm not just saying this because he's our dad. I'm saying it because he's one of the best actors out there. Unlike most Hollywood couples who basically go on screen and it highlights how unnatural they are. Let's be honest about it. People like Ben Affleck and people. Not picking, but it's true. You know, everyone says.
Not picking, he says, using his name specifically.
Yeah, Mark. But it's true. And we see how these couples think they're everything. And then it really does worry you when they go on screen and they can't naturally be, you know, just perfect together. We've said it about watching, is it Geely?
Yeah.
Sorry, Ben, I'm picking on you a lot here. You're a good guy. But
Affleck,
just,
he means.
Yeah.
I literally thought, oh my God, what's happening?
But Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, for me, are couple goals. They're the people I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still a child. I'm not growing up yet. If you haven't seen this film, you're going to hear about it a lot because it's being remade as we speak.
God almighty.
Shocking.
I hadn't actually seen this when we started the podcast, and I think, Ben, you mentioned it on an episode and I went and checked it out.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely unbelievable film. Unbelievable might be a bit over the top, but it's a damn good film.
Yeah, don't go overboard.
This girl's she's a very well-to-do... Well-to-do, is that a word?
Yeah.
Well-to-do person. And she has this carpenter come over who's basically Kurt Russell. She gets amnesia, as you do, and forgets who she is. So he introduces her to a more grounded real life, a regular life, and fools that she is his wife. And it's a bit of a mad story that most people are like, no, that wouldn't happen. I don't care what anyone says. When I watch this film, I believe that she was actually being tricked and went with it and was quite happy. And they fall in love and they have these kids that are a little terrors, aren't they?
They're not the bastards.
I'm trying not to be as rude or swear as much. Yeah, terrors is fine.
Tell them that as it is. They're little bastards.
And it's so nice to see, and I'm touching wood here because sometimes skip the end.
I thought we said don't be dirty.
I'm trying here. But the fact is, I don't want to curse stuff, and I've seen when me, Ben, and Gemma have said stuff, and a week later something happens. I don't believe that Goldie Hawn or Kurt Russell will ever break up. They are the most perfect couple. TMZ.
You've just split mum and dad up, you
I'm
dick.
Sorry.
Why would you do that?
And that might affect our podcast schedule because we'll have to go to mum's one weekend and dad's the other.
Yeah, but it means two Christmases.
Yeah.
Two lots of presents.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, if they do break up, wicked. But if not, I'm happy. And I was never going to leave this out because it was one of the most joyous, sincere, just beautiful films. It really is. It's silly and it's a real good Sunday afternoon. If you're sticking on telly, that sort of film you'd like, you know, like Short Circuit, those sort of, probably on Channel 5. Watch Overboard, amazing film, amazing chemistry, amazing couple.
The remake that they're doing, they've gender flipped it, I believe.
Have they really?
Yeah, because we live in this soft society now where people can't take a joke.
I'm offended by you saying that, Ben.
Exactly. I think people thought the idea of this man sort of tricking this woman into falling in love with him was a bit weird and possibly a bit rapey. So instead of just not making it again at all, they've flipped the genders as if that makes it better.
But then it makes her look like an absolute nutter.
Yeah.
Hollywood, stop messing around!
Pack it in.
God!
Why can't we just have normal films that don't offend people? Stop being offended, everyone. We don't offend people.
Never.
And we try. And we still don't do it. Are we back round to you again?
It is. So I've gone for a bit of a sentimental one on my last one.
Okay.
Okay. So my last choice is Ennis and Jack from Brokeback Mountain.
Oh.
Okay. So it's directed by Ang Lee and stars Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal as two cowboys who give in to their feelings on Brokeback Mountain and begin a forbidden relationship that lasts from the early 60s to the late 80s. So it's a beautiful love story. It's an unconventional story amongst some people because this is two people who found love in a place that they never expected to find love. As it's set in the 1960s, homosexual couples were frowned upon. It wasn't legal. It was seen as some kind of ridiculous sin, which it is not. And therefore, they had to keep their relationship quiet over the years. So we see them both flourish within their lives. They end up getting wives. They end up having children. But ultimately, Brokeback Mountain is their link that brings them together. And there's one heartbreaking thing that really makes me just weep with such sadness because they never got to have this ultimate love together. So fast forward to the end of the film. Jack dies.
What? I haven't seen this film.
Spoiler alert, mate. No, I've not seen it. Not going to bother now. Forget it.
Bloody hell.
Ruined.
Jack's dead.
Jack's dead. He ain't coming back.
Oh, shame.
The very end scene, Ennis has pretty much accepted that he can never have this love again. His life's done with. He's going to care for his daughters who's going off to college. He opens a wardrobe and he's got Jack's shirt with his shirt over the top of the hanger. And he says, Jack, I swear. The film ends. And it just breaks my heart because we don't see a lot of stories in Hollywood anymore regarding homosexual relationships. I think we're seeing more of them now. I think it's a lot more acceptable.
Yeah.
Check out Cock Blockers as well. It's got a wonderful little story. It's not Cock Blockers,
it's
is it?
It's just called Blockers, but there's a little picture of a cock next to it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all visual. I'm going to see a cock. I'm going to say something.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a cock as in a cockerel. Not a dong.
Cockerel blockers.
If you see Gemma in the street, don't get your cock out, please, and try and test to see if she's actually going to say something. She won't. She'll call the police. I've tried.
You're talking about Reese. Right?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. But there's more acceptance in cinema at the moment with LGBTQ characters. And this film was way ahead of its time, but it was so beautiful to see a real, genuine, passionate love story with two very well-known actors committed to these roles. Heath Ledger did get the Oscar nomination, but he didn't win it. He lost out to Jamie Foxx for Ray, I believe it was.
I didn't see that coming.
Hey. Classic banter.
That's all you expect now. Bloody hell, just setting it up for you.
And knocking him down.
That is gutted that he didn't win it for that.
I know, but he did win one after he
died.
Yeah,
but that's kind of we've got to give it him.
You
should
see Heath Ledger's face when that was announced. He was pissed.
What, when he won it for Dark Knight?
No.
I was going to say.
Oh my gosh.
That's a bit odd.
But it's a beautiful love story.
Yes, and if I had seen it, I could contribute more. But what I will say is if Hollywood now go and bloody do a remake, me and Ben are up for it.
Yeah.
You're probably not up for it, but I'm going to take you in a tent. Up a hill.
Well, as we're going to the Download Festival together, I'm really worried now.
You wish you knew how to quit
all
you.
All a ploy.
I'm getting a separate tent.
That won't stop me, dude. So what, are we on Ben's final one of the DL?
I'm excited.
If you thought that the bookies would have paid out on me picking Han and Leia, mate, this one's so fucking obvious. It's Deckard and Rachel from Blade Runner. Come on now. The major theme of Blade Runner is what does it mean to be human? And no relationship in the film asks that question more deeply than the relationship of Rachel and Deckard. Whether you believe that Deckard himself is a replicant, as I do, it's irrelevant because she 100% is. So either way, this is a relationship where at least 50% of it is an android. But their love is so real. Their passion for one another is so real that does it make it any less real, the fact that they're not both humans? Does their love mean less? No, because they have feelings, because they think, they feel. So it's not invalid in any way, shape or form. And that's what the film's all about. That ethos is then, we see it later on in the film as well with Roy Batty and, you know, the fact that he had all these moments lost in time like Tears in Rain. It's the same thing again. He has these human experiences despite the fact that he himself isn't one. And that's the crux of the whole film. And that's why you can't help but adore this relationship. More human than human between Rachel and Deckard. Yeah.
The reason I like this relationship so much is there isn't much dialogue between the two of them.
Mm.
There's very little. We will discuss this more coming up at the end of the show on our Secret Cinema special. But there isn't much exchanges between the two, but the bond's there, the love's there, the romance is there. And that takes a lot. And again, we're talking about great acting from Harrison Ford.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another Harrison Ford pick.
And
yeah.
I believe it's his best ever role, in my opinion. That's a big, big statement. But have we done him over Masturbate?
We have,
please tell me I picked him.
No, you didn't.
I think you picked Indiana Jones.
You picked Indiana.
I'm an idiot. Shame.
But you just see these two. And do you know what I was thinking the other day? Has she done much since this film?
Really not. No, she was in one of the Ace Ventura films.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah.
She was Lois Einhorn.
That's tragic for me.
Yeah, I think she had some of her own problems. I think she might have had mental problems and drink and drug problems, possibly. Don't quote me on that, but I know things didn't go too well for her. But the performances of Ford and Young in this film, just these swooning romantic performances, you can't help but fall for them. And you can't help but fall for her, because when she walks into the room for the first time, looking like a classic noir femme fatale, with the hair up and the porcelain skin and the red lips and the thick mascara, Wow, knockout.
So iconic, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah.
They have an incredible intimacy with each other.
Yeah.
You believe every time they move, every time they touch, those glances they shoot at each other. It is stunning.
It really is. And it's good that we've seen it so recently, so it is so fresh.
Very much so.
And do you know what? I'm going to say it now. We do our, is it our top five in August? Is that like usually it's our fourth birthday or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
This could make it, you know. Honestly, I do mean that. When I watched it again with you last week, I was like, this film is absolutely unbelievable. The final cut is a perfect movie.
Yes.
It is.
I bloody love it.
It is. And just to finish this choice off, I love how in Blade Runner 2049 they've done it again. So we've got the story of our replicant Kay and his AI girlfriend Joy. And neither of them are human, but again, their love feels entirely, entirely human. So that's a nice little bookend to the saga.
Yeah, I love 2049. We had so much doubt. Yeah, and it bloody proved us all wrong.
So good.
I really want to watch a double bill now.
Yeah.
Oh, let's do it. Let's hold a screening. Fuck Secret Cinema. We'll do Skip to the End Cinema, and we'll have our own screenings. People can dress up, and we'll do it once a month. Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Nah.
My final choice. It's a big one. It's Rocky and Adrian in the original Rocky film.
Aww. Adrian!
Rocky basically visits a pet shop every single day to see this girl. If you're going to do that, that's love in itself. But he comes up with a brand new joke as well. You try and think of a brand new joke every day. Not easy. He does it flawlessly. All to be near this girl, Adrian. Rocky 1 is an absolute masterpiece. It is. It is a fucking incredible movie that people don't give it credit for, because you see Hulk Hogan in the third one and Mr. T and all this, and it does get a bit to the point where you're a bit sick of it and it kind of gets a bit silly and less serious. Rocky 1 is a very serious, well-made movie. Stallone absolutely nails the role, but I believe these two were made to be together. Their romance is awkward. It isn't the most... We've talked about how great they are on screen. It's awkward. The first time they're together in his flat and they have that kind of kiss, it's so hard to watch. It doesn't... It's just... Ugh, it's not right. Their first kiss is horrible. It's
Hey, join the club.
It is. She's falling off. He's holding her and she's falling on the floor and he's awkward, and the way he moves, it's not right.
We've got action, so...
Yeah, this is why we should be filmed. But they're these two lonely souls that come together. And when they're together, they've got each other's back like no one else. You don't want to see the person you love go in a ring and get beaten shitless. You don't. Mm-mm. She does it because she loves him. She wants to be there for him. Again, I think it's a couple goal. The way that they are for each other, the romance they go through times where they've got all the money in the world, they go through the times where they're rock bottom, have got no money. They even have a robot servant. If that's a reason to be together, that's the best reason. But no one ever talks about Rocky for being such a serious, well-directed, serious good film. They don't. People just look at it now as a joke because it's part of the... Yeah. Look at the fifth one when he fights Tommy Gunn in the street.
Oh, dog shit.
Oh, dear.
But you go back and watch the ice rink scene. There we go. Let's talk properly. That is romance done perfectly. And I think this film is an absolute masterpiece. They go and make amazing dates in shitty landmarks in Philadelphia, and they do it well. They can turn anything perfect together. I absolutely love it. And these two, again, Stallone's gone on and done loads. Adrian, we've not seen much.
No, not really.
Nothing.
Proper name.
I don't know.
I've forgotten it.
Someone I knew had a massive crush on her.
She's just Adrian. She's Adrian to me. She was born Adrian and she'll die Adrian. But again, an amazing film.
Tell the people about what happened with the Stallone lookalike.
So yeah, Mike, who when we went to Philadelphia for my dad's birthday, we took him on a Rocky tour. It's a Yo Rocky tour. And they take you around Philadelphia and visit all the sites. He was on a site visit the other day right near the Rocky steps. And Stallone turned up to film parts for Creed 2.
What?
Not only that, he went up and saw the Rocky lookalike, who's my mate Mike, walked over, put his arm around him, stood there for 10 minutes talking about stuff. Later that day, after having loads of photos, all the press were there, Stallone tweeted out a picture and said, "Today I got to meet Rocky," and tagged in Mike. It had over 1 million likes.
Oh my goodness.
And if you ever got to meet Mike or know of Mike, he's the one person that deserves it more than anyone in the world. It's basically like me getting to meet Mac from Mac and Me. It's that special. Are we done?
I think we're done.
Well, I've got some social media suggestions from our lovely, gorgeous, sexy listeners. And we've got some new people on board too. So hello.
Hello.
Nice to meet you. So I'm going to start off at Twitter. So we've got Holly Tasker, at Holly Anna Tasker, said Mia and Sebastian from La La Land. Frankie and Johnny from the film Frankie and Johnny. Sir Michelle Pfeiffer,
never
Al Pacino.
No.
and Tom and Summer from 500 Days of Summer.
That's not a romance. That she breaks him.
Or he breaks her.
Yeah, not good.
Mm. Kate the Great Blanchett at Great Blanchett said Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams for The Notebook. Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara for Carol.
Can't pick her own films.
Yeah.
I know.
She actually listening to us now. And sweet, I love it.
And Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet from Titanic.
Ugh.
Mottingham Burger at Dartford Bandit said Eric Draven and Shelley from The Crow.
Yeah, big time.
Good
yeah.
choice.
He actually had a little statement, said the flashbacks of their relationship killed me when I was an angsty youth. I can see why.
Yeah.
It's very, very upsetting. Kay and Joy from Blade Runner 2049.
Excellent.
And John Wick and his wife from John Wick. Mrs. Wick.
I'd have gone with John Wick and the puppy.
Forever. Jaws 19 at Jaws 19 Show said Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head from Toy Story 2.
Yeah, I like the originality there. Good choice.
Marty and Jennifer from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And Superman and Lois Lane from Superman 2.
Classic.
Yeah, big time. Mm.
Then moving over to Facebook, Joe Myers said Clarence and Alabama Wally from True Romance.
Yeah, that was a popular one.
Mm-hmm. Jesse and Celine from Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight.
I've never seen them.
I've seen one of them, weirdly the third one.
Oh.
I have never so
I skipped
seen
the first
I was,
two.
I was a little bit lost.
Yeah.
And Carl and Ellie Fredrickson from Up.
Oh, that's tragic.
That rips my heart into pieces.
Still too soon to talk about that one.
Neil Roberts said Bender and Claire from The Breakfast Club.
Yep.
A Gray and Holloway from Secretary.
Oh, they're well kinky.
They are, a little bit. And Corbin and Lilu from The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Oh, great choice.
Mm. Finally, over to Instagram, we've got Craig_Thurlow said Robbie and Julia from The Wedding Singer.
Adam Sandler. Yeah, he does well in that.
Great in it. Seymour and Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, great choice.
And Shaun and Liz from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then very last one, Jono Apple said Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves for Speed.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Michael Biehn and Linda Hamilton for The Terminator.
I haven't thought about that, so not a bad one. Yeah, good choice.
She's got a lot of other shit going on. Yeah. So we worry about romance.
She doesn't want no love.
It's the last thing she's going to think of. And then finally, Gal Gadot and Chris Pine for Wonder Woman.
Nice recent. Lovely. Yeah.
So thank you very much, everybody.
Whose topic is it on the next episode?
It is mine. So on the next episode, I want to celebrate the characters and films that... they might have been bad eggs at first, but ultimately they redeem themselves at the end. So our next topic is going to be our top three redemptions.
Nice.
We've been to see A Quiet Place, the new horror directed and written and starring John Krasinski. We are going to be spoiling this film a lot, so for those of you who have yet to see it and do want to watch it, skip to the end of the section, come back when you've seen it, we'll be here waiting, and then you can see if you agree or disagree with what we say. The world is a different place. The emittance of sound is somewhat banished due to a mysterious batch of creatures who react to this with violence and no mercy. We follow the Abbott family, haunted by this rule and fighting to survive in the most fragile of existences. The film stars John Krasinski and Emily Blunt as a married couple with a couple of kids. So, I'm going to throw this over to Mark. So, A Quiet Place, is it worth raving about?
I think we should be quite quiet on this review. Like, I just don't know how to go overboard because I'm still kind of... it was the most intense cinema experience I've had in years. I was scared to eat, to rustle anything, to get any popcorn out. I've never seen a film that had such an impact and better use of sound, probably in my life, to be honest. It's had that much of an impact on me. My God, it was an experience. I absolutely loved it, so let's get that out there straight away.
Okay.
And I'll say it now. It's just topped Annihilation for my film of the year.
Wow!
It won't make my top five at the end of the year, but right now it is. Okay. And are you exhausted from it? Because I'm knackered.
Who knew Jim Halpert was such a good director?
Right?
I fucking loved this film. Every single second of it. It was just relentless tension. I felt like a tightness in my chest all the way through that only dissipated when the film ended. That's just blown away.
Big tuna strikes big.
Tuna!
Although it's not a scary film, it's more about, like you guys have said, the level of tension. It's ramped up in a way that is such an original idea. Why have we never seen anything like this before? Yeah. It's such a simple idea. No sound equals life. Sound equals big, fat, scary death. But it is just, it is such a clever film. It has really raised the bar for horrors. I mean, where does Krasinski go from here? Because, my God, what a blinding debut.
I mean, he's actually directed two films prior to this. They just didn't do anything good.
No.
Right, that's okay,
so this is the first one that's actually been on anyone's radar. But it is great, and it is a brilliant premise. And the thing is, because it relies so much on silence, it means that whenever we do hear sounds, it's all the more thrilling. It's all the more shocking.
Yeah.
Those hit like a knife. And it's a new way to do kind of, you know, some people call this a horror, to me it's a thriller, but it's a new way to do those kind of jump shocks.
Yeah.
And done flawlessly.
The only problem is now we'll have an influx of many people trying to imitate it, and there'll just be loads of films just silent for the first 20 minutes and it won't do it so well. But he's nailed it. I mean, he also directed an episode of The Office. He and his wife, who are genuinely married in real life, you know, which is a great chemistry. Was astounding to see how well they did on screen. And I know we joked about how real couples in real life on screen don't work out and don't, it's the opposite for me. These two just looked so in love. They had each other's back, but also when they're apart for the majority of the film, their concern for each other at such a distance is, it pulls on your heartstrings. It's horrendous. And this is why I'm looking forward to reviewing this film. And I am going to throw it to Ben on the spot. Those kid actors. We hate kids and we hate kids actors.
Yep.
But these kids, for me, and you may disagree, but I think they were fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, I thought they were great, especially the daughter, Millicent Simmons. I thought she was brilliant. We've had this influx of great child actors in the last couple of years. If you look at things like It, Stranger Things, Jacob Tremblay from Room, and these two kids keep up that run. I thought they were excellent. And going back to what you were saying there, Mark, about the relationship between Krasinski and Blunt and how real that felt, their love for their kids felt real as well. Now, the two actors aren't their real children, but because they're used to having this family unit together, I think they brought that to the screen so well. You absolutely believed that John Krasinski was a protective father trying to stop his wife and kids dying because of these crazy aliens. I started this by saying, who knew Jim Halpert was such a good director? Who knew he was such a good actor as well? I
mean, he's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be in an Amazon series soon. He's playing Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, which is a character that's been played in movies by the likes of Harrison Ford and Alec Baldwin before. And when I first heard he was going to be in this Jack Ryan thing, I'm thinking, he ain't right for it. That's not right for him playing a CIA agent. But having seen this now, I have no doubt that he could do it. He's far more kind of rugged and masculine
and
than
dude,
I thought he was.
That beard he rocks is unbelievable.
Oh, so good.
I've got beard envy with him, honestly. It looks so good. So you're right, though. He can do anything. I think I worry because sometimes when someone has such an impact overnight, they get thrown into everything. So you might see him suddenly get a Star Wars film attached to him or something. They just go a bit too over the top. So he needs to stay grounded. Otherwise, we might see him do something ridiculous.
I could see him end up doing a Marvel film, though, because Marvel like picking up young, hot directors, don't they? Like Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Ryan Coogler.
I'll be happy with that. Yeah. I think that's all right. But just stay grounded. And I know you are probably listening right now.
Yeah, he is.
And,
vote.
I'm so happy for him because I love him as Jim. I always feel like when you watch The Office, because there's so many episodes, they're part of your family. They're like one of your friends.
Yeah.
And to see him actually step away, and most people are probably thinking, oh, he's going to be shit. Everyone likes to kind of never give anyone a chance, do they? Let's be honest, everyone wants people to fail.
Yeah, people to fail, yeah.
And he right now has got the world at his feet. He can do what he wants, he can act in what he wants, he can produce, he can direct. I think, honestly, he's going to go really, really far. And what I love at the moment, you mentioned It, we've mentioned this, horror's back. People are coming up with original ideas again, and I think it's doing so well at the box office. It just means we don't want a sequel. Do not give us a sequel.
No.
But give us more original, decent horrors again, because it's been a while since we've had something that's took our breath away.
Agreed. And he holds this level of intensity, which I don't often see, even with dramatic actors. I don't know whether or not this comes from a creative place, if this comes from the comedy background that he's had, that we have seen him in The Office. But he has something which I like to call screen presence. Yep. Now, not a lot of actors do have it. They think they have, but sometimes they don't. But when you have a script where it's practically non-existent, I mean, 3/4 of the film is all silence. Yep. They're only communicating with each other through American Sign Language. But he holds the screen whenever he is on it. He commands that attention from the audience. And even when you are watching that film, you daren't even make a rustle. You daren't even make a sound in your chair because that might throw everybody off from watching the film. It's a wonderful performance. It's a fantastic screenplay. And my God, Millicent Simmons too.
Yeah.
She's a star in the making.
A great actress. I think it's only her second film.
Yes, she's going to be in Wonderstruck, which is hitting cinemas very, very soon. And again, I think that relies on her being a deaf actress. So a lot of the film is produced with subtitles too.
One of the things I adore about the film is that it doesn't waste a load of time with pointless exposition. They could have wasted 20 minutes telling us about how these aliens got here and all that kind of shit. They don't. They drop you in the middle of the action on like day 90 or something, mm-hmm. and then it skips ahead to day 453. And you just have to work out from context clues what's gone on. It's not that hard to work out what happens. You figure it out within a few minutes. And I love that they didn't waste time, because most films where they don't have any faith in their audience, would have some bullshit narration.
Yeah. I was worried it was going to fall into M. Night Shyamalan territory at one point, especially with the explanation of the creatures. But again, you just see that they exist.
Yeah.
That is all it is. And by luck of chance, towards the end, they figure out a way of how to defeat them. And I'm so glad it didn't start going into the area of the village, area of signs that we've seen in the past where we've gone, it's a great film. But then at those dying moments of the film, it just completely falls apart. But this wasn't the case.
But the good thing is I didn't leave the cinema going, where did those creatures come from?
No.
How do those creatures travel so far to the house in such a short time? I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Because the story got me. Yeah. I believe them. And what I really liked, and I don't know if you agree, but it reminded me a bit of Cloverfield, kind of like District 9, this monster. It was so original, I thought, even though I'm claiming it was like others, but it wasn't enough to say it's a rip-off. You obviously could see the influences were there, but it was a weird creature that had these like predator sounds, and it looked like a genuine threat. And you know, let's talk about the first time we introduced them. They're walking across this bridge, and the suspense is like nothing I've ever seen. And it's such a simple concept. They're walking along, don't make a noise. The kid who's trailing behind makes a noise, and before his dad can even get there and kind of clicks and thinks he's a goner, this monster just sweeps in and his son's dead.
Yeah.
That quickly, like that, is gone.
They didn't mess around, did they?
And the sound at this point is the first time you've got any kind of major sound, because you're sat in the cinema for 20 minutes in silence. There's still some dickhead on the phone by me, but I was quite, you know, I was engaged, I was waiting, I was thinking something's going to happen. And like you said, Ben, the impact of sound then is so much more from just the, that was it.
Yeah.
Sorry if I killed all our listeners' ears
there.
But it just completely took the kid out. And at that point, I'm like, fuck yeah, we're in for the ride of our life. This is like Predator. This is like all the decent monster movies in one, and it's only just started.
Yeah, it was a great way to drop us into that world. It's really interesting seeing how the characters then deal with the death of the kid, because it's Millicent Simmons' character, the daughter, who deals with it the most, because she gave the young lad a toy that then started making noise, and that's why he gets killed by the aliens. But I love how Emily Blunt deals with it as well, how she's trying to be this strong mama bear type character. And then, I don't understand the logic behind this, but she then ends up getting knocked up.
Oh, I know.
That's a bad choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you know, get pregnant in that environment.
No. Kids are going to scream, be honest.
Yeah, exactly. One of my favourite things in the film, though, is when she goes to give birth, just as an alien breaks into her house.
It's terrifying.
And she's trying her best to be quiet whilst she's in the middle of contractions.
Yeah.
And it's a great little bit of acting.
Yeah. You really believe that she's going through it completely. Even the point when she goes down to the basement steps and she stands on a motherfucking nail.
Oh, you feel that, don't you?
That nail is the real villain of the piece.
Death to the nail.
And then lying in that bathtub, the pain, and you see the monster in the background, which is so well directed. You just see enough, not too much, where it's like, oh my God. And the blood is dripping.
Yeah.
And it's such an impact, this dirty, rotten bath, and she's lying there. I think she's biting her hand, and you just... Yeah. It's, Ben, again, I'm going to keep repeating, but it's the impact of no sound is bigger.
Yeah.
Less is more.
Yeah.
It's
so good.
It's the threat. As soon if a noise is made, then not only is she going to be killed, but her unborn child is also in danger.
At that point, I think I nearly passed out. I'm not going to lie. I was like, I can't breathe. That's probably 2 minute trips to Pizza Hut for playing for that. But also, I was at that point like, this is too much. And this is what, 45 minutes in?
Must be.
The film's only an hour and a half.
Apparently, Emily Blunt wasn't even going to be in it to begin with. But right? A couple of dudes wrote the first version of this script. So I can't remember their names. But then Krasinski got a hold of it. He did a rewrite. He showed it to Emily Blunt, his wife. And she went, I want to be in this.
Really?
And that's how it became a family affair.
No way. Yeah.
I kind of wish their real kids in real life were in it. That would have been the perfect film.
I think they're like 3 or 4 years old.
And not deaf.
And not, well, that too.
As far as we know. Mark, you mentioned then that the alien reminded you a bit of Cloverfield. At one point, it was mooted to be part of the Cloverfield universe. So the two dudes who wrote the first script, when they started taking it to different studios, the studio that owns the Cloverfield franchise considered doing that.
Oh. No.
But then in the end, they decided it would be better as a standalone piece.
God.
They probably got away with it there as well, because that piece of shit that was
the Cloverfield Paradox. It's terrible.
I still haven't seen it.
Don't
worry about it.
We'll save you an hour and a half.
Exactly.
Don't.
There's a part of the creature that reminded me, it looked like an amplified cochlea. You know when it starts screaming, especially towards the end?
Yeah.
It looked like the inside of an ear was completely defined and completely elaborated. I really like that, because essentially that was the key, that was its strength, but it was also its weakness. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I liked a lot of things about this film. I don't know,
let's go watch it again.
I'll tell you what I didn't like. I didn't like the old bastard sitting near me and Mark. So a film that is almost entirely in silence requires silence from the audience. The audience should always be silent in a movie theatre. We know this, but especially in this one. And these two old fuckers, I tell you, they kept talking through it at the most inopportune time. So there's a bit when the young girl, she's in a cornfield, and one of the alien creatures comes behind her. The husband says to his wife in the audience, they go, "It's behind her, look." And then the wife goes, "Oh yeah, she can't hear it." It's
God.
We have eyes. We can see that information for ourselves. We don't need the running fucking commentary, for Christ's sake.
Idiots, aren't they? Absolute idiots.
I had a family of three next to me, and they were the chavviest family ever. So we had bloody daughter like constantly Snapchatting shit and giving poses. And then I don't think it was her dad, but he was basically going, "Look, hey, it's going to get really quiet in a minute. Like, I can hear the fucking story. Just shut the fuck up." It's so frustrating. Why? Why do these people exist? Why?
I just hate the general public.
The film's been out a while now, and by the time people are listening to this, if you go and see it, the kids are back at school.
Thank God.
The parents are probably watching Jeremy Kyle. So go to the cinema in an afternoon showing and enjoy yourself, because right now you might be the only person that gets to see it in the cinema without any knobheads. And if you can do that, you're in for a treat right now.
Well, I thought that. We went to a 4 o'clock showing and we still had knobheads.
Always a knobhead.
So what about that ending?
Ooh.
Not everyone makes it.
Heartbreaking.
Help it.
Yeah.
Big Tuna.
I love how he sacrifices himself for his kid. And again, that's another great use of sound amidst the silence.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end, one of these alien creatures is coming towards the two kids who are in this car. And the only thing that Krasinski's character can do is scream to get the attention of the alien so that the kids can get away. And it is heartbreaking.
It reminded me of Jurassic Park when they're in the Jeep and the T-Rex was attacking them. It was that kind of fear. Very heroic, which I like, and it's been a long time since we've had that film that doesn't give you the big Hollywood, "Yay, they're all okay, it's all okay." It's like The Mist, like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Bleak.
But he was such a hero.
He's always a hero.
And he was the ultimate protector of his family. And then, of course, Emily Blunt's got to start taking names and kicking ass with that shotgun to get rid of those creatures. Yeah. Good girl.
And that's the worry, isn't it? Because that looks like it might be setting up a sequel, and they absolutely should not do it.
No, don't
like
do
said.
It. Keep it as it is.
But then it's broke box office records.
It has. I think it should have Hollywood quaking, because now audiences are responding more to original stories than they are remakes or reboots or pointless sequels that seem to be coming in here, there and everywhere.
Finally!
I know! We've won, guys! I think we should score this. What do you guys think?
Let's do it.
Should we go for it? Marky Mark, your score, please.
It's pretty much perfect, to be honest. That's a big statement to say.
Mm.
Do you know what? 10 out of 10.
Jesus
Wow.
Christ.
Because how can I sit here right now and say it's better than Annihilation, which was 9?
Yeah.
And if I worked for Empire magazine right now, they do it out of 5.
Yeah.
So let's double it. I probably would give it 5 stars. So it's 10 out of 10. I think it's absolutely awesome. It's changed the way we look at film. It's had such an impact. It's used sound well. And it's amazing. 10 out of 10. Why not?
Yowza.
Nice one. Ben,
big,
your
big,
scores.
Big words. Well, I'm not going crazy like that. I'm going to give it an 8, which I think it thoroughly deserves. I really enjoyed it, especially the direction. One thing I should have said when we actually were in the review is Jim Halpert frames a lot of the shots from behind. Jim. So you see people in the centre of the screen from behind, and it reminded me a lot of Robert Redford's direction in the film Quiz Show.
Wow.
Which is high praise because he was Oscar nominated for that. But it's a great film. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. 8 out of 10.
I'm going to agree with one of you. It's going to be Ben.
I've lost the plot. It's a 9, isn't it? No.
It's a great film. It's very original. Thank God we're starting to get films like this coming through the cinema. It's not scary, but it's certainly thrilling. So by the deductions of mathematics and because we want to, it's a big skip to the end score of 9 out of 10.
See what I've done there. Yeah. Do you like that?
Nice.
It's competition time!
Ah, we're all dead!
That was Eric Cartman again.
If you'd listened to our last episode, which I hope you did, you'd have heard that we gave away shitloads of stuff. I'm going to say it. There is so many competitions now. I remember when it got to the point where we were like, on this episode, we've got 3 things to give away. We gave 6 things away. So let's kick things off.
Too many.
I know, it is. It's getting ridiculous. Universal gave us some Blockers bundles, which are really, really good, which have a phone case, some shot glasses, and a t-shirt. The question we put out there to win this bundle was, what WWE wrestler stars in Blockers? So, Ben, tell me.
Wah, 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 wah. John Cena.
No one tweeted, wah, 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 wah. But at Fireball Darren did say John Cena, and he will be getting that bundle in the post. I'm quite happy about that. The second one is Truth or Dare, which is the new horror. And our good friends at Universal gave us a bundle of a t-shirt, a hoodie, a notebook, and a phone case. And we put the question out there, who would you like to play Truth or Dare with? And at Jamza32 said Emily Blunt. He kept it clean, I like it. Yeah. I think that's a good answer. So you're going to be rewarded.
He didn't give a reason of any kind.
Just Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, bye.
I like it. It's a blunt answer. It's straight to the point. I like it. You don't have to be... I saw some rude things and dirty and innuendos.
Degraded.
We don't have them here. There's no time for that sort of stuff. Warner Brothers gave us probably our biggest ever bundle for the release of Ready Player One. It had LED glasses, a button set, a light-up USB hub, a Bluetooth speaker, a backpack, a mini arcade machine, a baseball t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and shitloads more. I can't be asked to say. There's so much stuff. There's just everything you can name with Ready Player One. We've got it, and we put it in a bundle. Who directed Ready Player One was the question. Gemma?
Steven Spielberg.
He certainly did, and Anthony Rubman on Facebook will be getting that. And when he gets it in the post, do you know what? I want to see it. I want to see it in the flesh, all those prizes.
Just basically like hanging like a buckaroo.
And
on
tell
him.
Us your address.
Balancing a USB stick on his nose.
His wife or something just That's sitting right, there. Yeah, that'd be amazing. We should get like a buckaroo and play it live on the podcast. It'd be the most boring thing ever to listen to. Yeah. It'd be good fun.
We did podcast darts one, so buckaroo would be fine.
And Jim, you are forever in our thoughts.
R.I.P.
Funko gave us a set of 8 pops, which are for the Ready Player One range, which are really, really cool, and a set of figures and the keys from the film. So people went crazy online for this. So I think it's probably one of our most popular competitions. What score did we give Ready Player One? Gemma?
7.
We did, and Louise Bishop noticed that and wrote on Facebook, and we'll be getting those Funkos in the post. Because a Funko is so good to us, they gave us a second bundle of everything I've just mentioned. And we said all you needed to do was go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star iTunes rating. And do you know who did?
Go on.
Krusty Krats. And they, with a K. Krusty Krats. So it's okay. I love the names of these people. Do you know what I really like? They put 5-star. I've listened to 93 episodes in 3 months.
Crikey.
That's mental. That's about 30 a month. That's one a day.
That's a ton.
That's
mental.
A lot. That is more. That is, you know, fair play getting a prize for it, but that is mental.
I couldn't listen to 2 hours of us a day.
No. About an hour and a half, I'd usually listen to, yeah. To tie in really nicely with the spoofs on the last episode, so our topic was the top 3 spoofs of all time. God, if there's one decent spoof that everyone came through was Airplane, let's be honest about it. So Last Exit to Nowhere gave us a Trans American Airlines t-shirt, which is really, really cool. Really simple question. Who directed Airplane, Ben?
The Zuckers.
Very good. Well done. And do you know their actual names?
Yeah, the Zuckers. Just
yeah, that's it.
David and the
and
other one.
Jerry. A bit like the ice cream, but now it's Ben and Jerry. Ben and Jerry's? That would be good. Free fish food.
Ben and Jerry.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Oh, the cookie dough.
Yeah.
One.
That is the best.
I like the ones with the little fish in the fish reader. It is good.
It's all right, but it's no cookie dough.
All of them.
Who does pralines and cream? Is that Haagen-Dazs?
Yeah.
That's Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. Any ice cream would be damn good right now. A McFlurry machine from McDonald's.
What's the one they do at Pizza Hut?
Ice cream factory.
Ice cream factory.
They actually follow us on Instagram. So
Pizza Hut? Yeah. So, is that why you go in every month?
I know. Discount. And the winner of this competition, back to the thing, was at KJ Crichton. Also, because we had Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One, we got an amazing t-shirt for Jaws, the Amity Island. Really simple. What year was Jaws released? And the answer is 1975. And at PIntier7, we'll be getting that in the post. And also, they gave us a Temple of Doom t-shirt with the club Obi-Wan. Probably the simplest question you could ever put out there. What franchise is Obi-Wan part of? Gemma?
Star Wars.
It is. And at Cinema Get, we'll be getting that in the post. And what I like about our winners, they are, like they did with our t-shirt, I love it when they get our t-shirts from Dark Bunny and Last Exit, because you see them put pictures up.
Yeah.
It's cool. Amazing. And finally, they gave us a Mayflower t-shirt from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And what the question was is, which actor stars in Close Encounters and Jaws? Come on, Gemma.
It's Richard Dreyfuss.
It is. And James Gane will be getting that in the post.
Good.
And again, I want to see pictures. And finally, Dark Bunny Tees came along and gave us two t-shirts. The first one is an alien tee, and it's a really smart design. And all we said was, who plays Ripley in Aliens? So, Gemma again, let's see the answer, and then we'll save the last one for Ben.
I could get surprises out of this.
This isn't the quiz yet either.
No, it's Sigourney Weaver.
It is, and Adam Jops will be getting that in the post.
Good.
There's some
Adam.
Good prizes, man.
Good work, Jops.
And the final prize from Dark Bunny is the Steve Rogers Beard Oil T-shirt, which is for Infinity War, which will be our next main review.
Oh, God, yes.
Nice.
Are you excited?
Just
or
a bit.
Who is your favourite Avenger? So, you can't answer this, because this is down to the actual social media. Olivia Crichton has said Captain America. And I think that ties in nicely with the t-shirt. Yeah. So
very lovely.
That's it. Should we give stuff away, or are we done with this?
I'm sick of this.
Let's just knock it on the head.
Well, each week we'll drop a feature from now on. So this is the last ever competition we're ever doing. Right then. So we were going to review Rampage, okay? So we've got some nice prizes from Funko. The 8-bit Rampage free pack, which is very, very limited edition from them. This is really, really rare. You can't get it unless you live in America, but we've got three of them giveaway. The Rock stars in the film. What is The Rock's real name? That's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
As our movie masturbate coming up is Robert Downey Jr. They've given us a Tony Stark pop from Spider-Man Homecoming. They give us an Iron Man plush, some Iron Man daubs, and the Infinity War range of Iron Man pops for the new film. Bloody loads. Let's make it really simple. Who directed Iron Man 1? Pretty simple, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is how we do things here. So, our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere saw that we're doing the rewatch for Sunshine, and they've given us a Icarus 2 t-shirt. What score do we give Sunshine later in the episode?
Stay tuned for that.
There we go.
And they've just introduced some new patches, which are really smart. You know, people do it for bands and stuff. Yep. They've done it for films. A pack of 18 different ones. There's The Thing, there's Blade Runner, there's loads. Let's say, to keep it in conjunction, Patch Adams was played by which actor?
My
do you like
goodness
that? Do you like that? Not scraping the barrel here at all. I like the fact that people take the time, and we do tweet them out, our iTunes ratings. So I believe that we should give all that Funko goods that I've said so far away to someone that leaves us a rating. That seems very fair to me.
Yeah.
And finally, Richard Sounds have given us another set of AKG Y50 Bluetooth headphones.
Bonus.
Ooh.
Last time we said, what would be the first thing you listen to if you received them? Let's make it a little bit different. What podcast would you listen to if you won these Bluetooth headphones?
Okay. Yeah.
People still ask, even though we say it after 94 episodes, the best way to enter the competitions is email us or go on skiptotheend.co.uk, where our Facebook, our Twitter, or our Instagram is. You can direct message us, you can tweet us on our main feed. Do what you want. If you get us that answer, that's the best way to enter the competition. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to announce all the winners of all these incredible prizes.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we talk about our favourite performance from said actor or actress. On the last episode, we picked out Robert Downey Jr., man. So, We're going to be talking about our favourite performances from his films. And Ben, I want to throw this over to you first. What is your favourite performance from that little chap over there?
There can be only one. Yeah. Wayne Gale from Natural Born Killers.
Mine too.
Yes! It's the blackest of black comedies, and he is undoubtedly the comic highlight as the Aussie tabloid TV journalist Wayne Gale. The fact that he plays him as an Aussie, first of all, is such an out-there, bizarre decision. And he has great success playing Aussies. There's a couple of films. I'm sure the other one will come up at some point today. And it just adds to the humour of it, and it makes him seem more of an outsider when he's surrounded by all these Americans. The character gets better and better and funnier as he gradually succumbs to Stockholm Syndrome and when he starts giving in to his own murderous impulses. One of the funniest parts of the film is when he grabs one of the guns that are lying around the prison, and then he does this roll on the floor, and he's trying to look like a badass gunman, but he looks like a toddler having a tantrum. And even Mickey Knox at that point realises that Wayne's gone too far when Wayne says, "Let's kill all these motherfuckers!" It's so fucking funny. And I love at the end, he accepts his defeat. He accepts his death like a boss. He stands there with his arms outstretched like Christ on the cross. And he's the final victim of Mickey and Marilyn Knox. Hilarious, brilliant, should have won an Oscar.
Yeah, he's so over the top in this. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. That absurdness as the film keeps going on makes him even more of a joy whenever he is on the screen. I do love it when he's got a shotgun strapped, like gaffer taped over to him, and he's got a camera right in front of him. So this is his opportunity to talk to the world, being in this crazy prison riot. And the only thing he says is, "I am Wayne Gale, presenter of American Maniacs. I am an Emmy Award winner." All about himself. Couldn't give a toss about what's going on around him. I heard that he was investigating another sort of shock jock in Australia.
Yep.
And that was the reason why he adapted that Australian accent. But of course, Oliver Stone listened and went, "Yeah, it works. It really does work." But oh, he's solid gold in this. Solid, solid gold.
He's absolutely amazing. Like you said, it's just such a full throttle out there performance. There's no vanity.
None whatsoever.
And
no.
I love that. I love an actor who can just give themselves over to the extremes of a role like this. He's never bettered it. And he's been brilliant in many, many things, but he's never bettered this.
He just succumbs to the inner demon that is Wayne Gale.
Wayne Gale.
Nicely said. I kind of wish I was on the same page this time, because you've had so much fun just announcing it. I believe some actors were born to play one role, and for me this is the perfect example. Tony Stark in Iron Man 1.
Of course.
Excellent.
I think this is some of the best casting ever, and when I was researching this week for this, I didn't realise how much of a fight they had to put up to get him onto the actual pay books from Marvel. Stan Lee said he wanted him. He was top of the list. Is it John Favreau?
John Favreau.
Yeah. Favreau, close. He fought badly. He was at the point where it wasn't going to happen because they just didn't want some ex-person that was related to drugs and alcohol and bad habits. It happened, and for me, I can't imagine anyone else in the shoes of Tony Stark. I can't.
Yep.
He looks cool as fuck, let's be honest about it. He looks so, so cool.
Oh, I.
He's a lot like the second character, really, in real life. He's very rich. He knows what he wants. He knows how to bloody party, let's be honest about it. There's no one else out there that can throw a party like old Robert Downey Jr. And also, I think he knows how to work a crowd.
Yeah.
If you ever see his press junkets and stuff. And if you piss him off, which I saw that guy on Channel 4 do, that's not good. Don't go down that road of pissing him off, because he won't put up with any shit.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, that guy from Channel 4 pisses a lot of people off.
Yeah, I don't like that
guy.
Is it
Krishnan Gurumurthy?
Krishnan Gurumurthy,
He's never coming on my other podcast, because he would just do my head in. Not that he'd want to interview me, but anyway, let's get back to Robert Downey Jr. He knows what he wants. He's a damn good actor. And in this, I think, like I said, if you can't imagine anyone else in the shoes, that gives credit to the performance. He's not arrogant, in my opinion. I just think he's confident. People say, "Oh, he's too arrogant." You know Pepper Potts, who's old, what's her name?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
I'm not a big fan of her.
I love Pepper Potts.
She's great. Really? Yeah.
She's a weak link for me. Probably because I know that the guy from Coldplay's been in her.
My God.
In her, he says. Yeah.
No space been, in her no, either.
I said with her.
Well, I play the tape back, mate.
Was he in her upper bin?
Outside Greg's.
I kind of don't want to plug Greg's too much, because they might send us stuff, and right now a box full of sausage rolls would not be good. Or chocolate eclairs.
In an envelope. Well, they can see the grease.
They just deliver it to our house.
That's true, actually.
Would you want free Greg's?
I'd like a steak bake.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, I fancy a Greg's now.
Me too.
Should we do a skip trip to Greg's after this?
Let's do it.
You know the yum-yums that are like donuts?
Oh my God, don't. You're playing with my emotions.
If anyone here knows anyone that works at Greg's, listen to this part of the episode and send us a box load of Greggs.
Should we get back on task?
Oh, yes. So, Iron Man. Do you know what, as well, when I watched it again this week for research and kind of reminding myself why it's such a good film, I actually put it up there as one of the best Marvel films I've seen. I honestly rate it that highly. And remember, it was the first one.
Yep.
It was.
That takes a lot of balls. At that time, it wasn't the big thing to release 3 or 4 a year. It wasn't. We hadn't got the universe. And now, how many years later? 10, 12 years later, we've now got Infinity War coming up, and he's still the main focus. Mm-hmm. On the poster, he's the main guy. We might lose him. We might not. Find out on the next episode. If you're going to put a bet on right now, I think it's him or Captain America. And that's quite tragic.
Well, they're going to bite it.
Yeah. Someone's going to.
Someone big is going to.
Oh, I think it's the Hulk. I still think the
Hulk's
going
to
bite
it. Tune in 2 weeks' time to find out who dies.
Oh, you know,
it's getting good. We're going off topic a lot here, but it doesn't matter. Robert Downey Jr.
And you're absolutely right. I don't think there is a better synergy between character and actor than those two. He just is fucking Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Mark, did you ever try and shave your beard into the Tony Stark style?
We all did, and I ended up like David Brent. Not good.
I look like someone who has to introduce themselves to their neighbours when they move into a new district.
I would still fancy you, Ben, with that beard. Honestly, I would. But anyway, let's get away from that.
Thanks, question
babe,
mark.
Babe, I've told you I want to take you in a tent.
Babe!
You
know what I mean?
It's babe now.
Sweetheart.
Christ.
Anyway, let's talk about loads of sweethearts on our social media.
Aww.
Good
Seamless.
God almighty. And the first one on Twitter is one of our prize winners from today, Olivia Creighton at Liv Creighton. She said, he'll always be Tony Stark to me. However, he was amazing in Zodiac.
Oh, yes. What a film.
Great film. Scott Jameson on Facebook has said, the guy is a goddamn charisma machine and is endlessly watchable in anything, but I'd have to say Tony Stark purely because he played it so often and so well.
Nice.
A lot of love for Stark so far.
Mm. Hell of a lot.
Rightly so. Stephen White on Twitter at Gaia Theory has said, my absolute favourite, Ascanor Dark.
Oh, the animated
I've
thing.
Not seen that in years.
Yeah, use rotoscoping, that weird animation technique. It's from a Philip K. Dick book as well. Really trippy film.
Nice.
Like
brilliant.
That a lot. Yeah. Summer on Twitter at Salsita Benita has said, less than zero, he nailed a cokehead. There's a reason for that. Because he was one.
I've never seen that film.
No,
it's a good
I
film.
Haven't.
A great book. Bret Easton Ellis book as well. Mike Lee on Facebook has said, Two Girls and a Guy is my favourite. Beautiful and heartbreaking. You just want to hold him safe.
I'm sure I've seen that on someone's phone. Two girls and a what?
That was two girls and a cup. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's gross. Sorry. That's
definitely
not what I've seen.
Two girls and a guy, I think it was Heather Graham.
Yeah.
Nah.
Well, not on his phone.
No.
No.
Don't check that out if you're listening.
No. Matt Lewinsky on Twitter at WEHitman_elite has said, back to school, he fit in well with Rodney Dangerfield. That was one of his really, really early performances.
And Rodney Dangerfield, a fellow Natural Born Killers star.
Yeah, I get no respect. Carrie the Cakes at CarrieCakes80 has said, think it would have to be, and she said B with four E's, Harry Lockhart in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Amazing. That's probably my second choice, I reckon.
And
damn
that was,
good.
That was his comeback film. He was in, you know, on the outs with everyone. People wouldn't hire him until, was it Shane Black put him in that film?
Yeah. Good move, Shane.
Adam Bourne on Facebook has said, Wayne Gale from Natural Born Killers, over-the-top news guy who then goes full-on rogue, joining the chaos. Absolutely brilliant character.
Couldn't agree more.
Indeed.
Brilliant.
Carl on Twitter at Blake_Smith30 has said, is there any other choice between Kirk Lazarus in Tropic Thunder? Another one where he plays an Aussie, but an Aussie method actor who pretends to be a black guy.
Very method.
It's one of the craziest, weirdest performances ever and was nominated for an Oscar.
It was,
a miracle.
It blows my mind that actually got an Oscar nomination. Honestly, crazy.
It is.
And finally on Twitter, Jessica Dwyer, at Jessica Dwyer, it said, when I met him...
Bragger.
Yeah. She says, I thanked him for Chaplin. It was a beautiful and perfect performance. He was surprised and actually took a moment and said, thank you. I still learn stuff from that guy.
Wow.
I bet he's listening as well.
Definitely.
Vote. whose turn is it to pick out the magic hat?
Mine.
Pick someone good.
I will.
Do a drum roll.
Please, always. Okay. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over Julianne Moore.
Yay!
16 months ago, I, Robert Kappa, and a crew of 7 left Earth frozen in a solar winter. Our payload, a stellar bomb with a mass equivalent to Manhattan Island. Our purpose, to create a star within a star.
rewatch this time is Sunshine. 50 years in the future, the sun is dying. A team of scientists and astronauts set off aboard the Icarus II with a mission to reignite the ailing sun using a nuclear bomb. As they near their destination, they receive a distress beacon from the first Icarus ship, thought to have been lost 7 years before. They deviate from their course to investigate the beacon and find much more than they bargained for. The film is directed by Danny Boyle from a script by Alex Garland and features an international ensemble cast including Cillian Murphy, Rose Byrne, Chris Evans, Mark Strong and Michelle Yeoh. My word, I'm excited to talk about this, but I kind of want to skip to the end on this one because people either seem to love or hate the final act of this film, so that's where I want to begin. Gemma, first of all, do you like the film or not? And secondly, does the ending work for you or not?
To answer your first question you've just raised there, Ben.
This is all very professional, isn't it?
Wow.
I love the film.
Yeah?
Absolutely mind-blowing. Beautiful effects, gorgeous music, incredible sound effects, which I do want to talk about later. And then to move on to the second point. I bloody loved it. I love the twist. The twist works. Just when you think you're going in one direction, Danny Boyle goes, nah-uh-uh, sister. And then he turns you to the right. And then it's almost like this kind of weird cat and mouse kind of short horror film. It's incredible. I flipping love this film. I'm super excited to get juiced into it. Yeah, I'm of the love variety here. I'm a lover, not a fire.
Mark, Gemma flipping loves it. How about you?
Taking on board the comments that Gemma just made and taking on your question, I bloody love the film. I think it's Danny Boyle's finest piece of work he's ever done.
Yeah?
The man can do any genre. He's proved it, but this is what he does best. To answer your second question, I also love it. I think it's a great ending. I've seen reviews, and I'm not joking, IMDb is full of 1 stars.
Yes.
Yeah. Worst film I've ever seen.
Yep.
And 10.
Yep.
There's no 5s, there's no 7s, there's no 3s. It's 1 or 10, and I'm on the latter. I'm a 10. This is brilliant. I don't know how else you would end it. Maybe the crew members face each other and decide who lives and who doesn't. That, for me, isn't enough. I would just be like, yeah, that's all right, but who cares? And, you know, who lives for the sake of the planet? That's not great. The twist in this is a little bit like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
And I love it. And you know what I'm like with horror. Throw in the element of the whole 28 days later.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go wrong. Sci-fi and horror, brilliant. I'm sold. And then add in the writer, who's one of my favourite at the moment.
Yeah, Garland.
You can't go wrong, dude. I, yes, and 10 out of 10.
That's the end of that review. Let's move on. I'm with the both of you. I think it's a spectacular film, and I love the ending. You know, Mark has said exactly what I was going to say, that it's like From Dusk Till Dawn. It seems to come out of nowhere, the horror element at the end, but it works like gangbusters for me. And I get why people don't like it. It's a Marmite film. If you think that this is a kind of a pure, hard sci-fi film, and then that happens, you might feel like you've been missold something. But for me, it worked perfectly. So let's talk about the start of the film, then. Let's skip back to the start, yeah, shall we?
Wow.
One of the things I absolutely adore about this film is that almost nothing happens for 20 minutes. And normally that pisses me off. So like The Descent really fucking infuriated me of 45 minutes of nothing. But this film, there's very little happening in 20 minutes, but it's on purpose. It's so that we can get used to the atmosphere of the film. It establishes the mood. And it also gets us used to life aboard the Icarus. What do you think?
Bloody hell, I'm not intelligent enough for this. Right, okay. So for me, it's what defines humanity in the film. It's building up, like you said. The visuals are enough to keep me engaged. So where you talked about The Descent not gripping you,
yeah,
it's because girls are just going down in a big hole and it's not doing enough for you just to be like, wow. I know you've seen some films with girls going in a big hole that would keep your attention.
Okay.
I'm going to be... No dirtiness. No, let's stop. But the fact we've got no aliens, no battles going on, no ultra-advanced technology, none of that... I love it, dude. It gripped me.
Yeah.
I was more blown away by the visuals at this point because I hadn't seen anything from Danny Boyle on this scale. So for me, dude, I'm gripped. I'm watching the visuals thinking, a bit like Annihilation, to be fair.
Yep.
It didn't matter that stuff wasn't going on. I was gripped. And to sit there and watch it again on Blu-ray on my projector, I was sat there going, this looks as good as Interstellar. Probably better at times. I bloody loved it, dude. It gripped me straight away. So I was fine with 20 minutes of nothing happening. Don't get me wrong, some films will test me on that, but this one got me.
Yeah.
I found it gave the grounding of each character that is on board and gives you a sense of they really are just on their own. It kind of has this weird kind of claustrophobic vibe to it.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
But you understand Kappa a little bit more. You understand Mace. You understand they have a very fraught relationship, all because Kappa decided to overrun on his message, sending back to Earth. So everything is very fracturous. I think everything is very heightened already, enough as it is when you're sort of a million miles away from Earth. near a great big bloody sun.
Yeah.
But I think it just sets the mood perfectly throughout the whole film. We're getting to know these characters a lot more in confined spaces, but of course, we're not going to know every single one of them by the end of the film. I think it's a great setup.
Indeed. And the claustrophobia you've just mentioned there was a key element to it. And apparently Danny Boyle, in preparation for the film, he took the main cast onto a submarine and he wanted to show them what it was like to live in those
bloody
close
hell.
Quarters.
Yeah.
So I think they wanted to kind of replicate that close atmosphere, which worked amazingly.
I bet they were like, piss off, we didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, fuck you.
This is not good for me at all.
The look of the film, Mark, that you've touched on, the cinematography by a guy called Alwin Kuchler is absolutely amazing. The film looks glorious all the way through. And one of the things I love is whenever he's on the ship, whenever the crew are on the ship, all the colours are blues and greens and greys. There's no red or yellow. And the reason for that, it was intentional. He wanted it to be that the mind, doesn't recognise the reds and yellows until we see the sun. So anytime we see the sun, we're then overwhelmed by these reds and yellows that we'd been deprived of before. It's great photography.
It's like association. It almost represents danger. It represents nuclear. It represents a beginning or an end. The colour palette is so dark.
Yeah.
The one thing I took away from the film, just the colours, they might be muted at the main sort of crux of the whole story, but my God, whenever we see the sun, whenever we see those solar flares.
I wish I saw it at the cinema.
Me too.
Me three.
I thought the exact same thing and I watched it again the other day.
If we ever see it at like the Prince Charles or something, I'd make the trip because it's just so good. And the CGI is great. Like, I never looked at any of it thinking this doesn't look right. My favourite bit are the solar panels on the spaceship. I was literally, as they're going past, I was thinking, this would be the thing that makes me buy a 4K Blu-ray player. They look unbelievable. I was genuinely in awe watching it again, considering the age of it. It's one of the most beautiful films I've seen. Remember the time that you saw Her for the first time and cinematography's done so well and you are speechless?
Yep.
That's what this does for me.
Yep.
Revisiting this film, I was sat there with a grin on my face just thinking, this is just beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
The sound. You mentioned the visual, but the sound. So I did a bit of digging, and apparently the sounds were captured by a Midwestern university. So these are sounds that are actually heard in space that they incorporated within the film. And it is unlike anything that I've ever heard before in a film set in space. It's very almost alien-esque. The noises, the cranks of the ship, the Icarus and the Icarus 2, it is otherworldly, but it works spectacularly because you really do get a feeling that you are long, long away from home. You are in the depths of space, and it is just so foreign, but it sounds so crisp.
It does. It's amazing. And then when you link in the sound with the score as well.
Oh, my God.
Gemma's just lost it. Gemma's just exploded. So the score was done by the members of the electro band Underworld, along with a chap called John Murphy, and it's absolutely amazing. It's one of those types of scores that you always notice it. Some scores kind of disappear into the background and you don't realise they're there. You always notice this score, but it never feels overwhelming.
Yeah.
It never overtakes the visuals or the acting. It's just a beautiful accompaniment to everything that's happening.
And that, for me, reminds me and takes me back to the films like Alien, Event Horizon.
Event Horizon.
Can tell that they've been perfect influences for this, and he won't mind putting his hands up. I'm sure he's listening now, Dan. Danny, vote. But Danny will probably be sitting there going, yeah, Mark's right. Like, I did.
He will. Danny will go in, he's nailed it again, Mark. He's got it again.
How does he do it? Every episode.
Every bloody week.
It's true. You know he's watched Alien and you know he's watched Event Horizon. And Christopher Nolan is one of my favourite filmmakers in the world. I'm never going to slag him off to the point where I think he's a bad filmmaker or director.
No.
But you can see from Interstellar as well how he's took on bits of this, especially the long shots of just the craft and the actual long shots of just space. And it looks perfect. And I think in too many films, we get shit CGI that ruins it and takes you away from it. I believe that I was on board, and I do believe the CGI sun is how it would look.
Yeah,
I do. I genuinely believe it's real.
And it's mesmerising. As we've mentioned, with the cinematography depriving us of those yellows and reds until we see the sun, it plays into one of the characters. It's Searle. He's like the ship's psychologist. And he keeps getting... He's mesmerised by the sun. He keeps going to the observation deck and sitting there and just watching the sun come over him to the point where his skin is flaking off because he does it too often. And we feel that. We understand where he's coming from, because when we see the sun, it is that bright and that powerful and that all-encompassing.
Isn't it funny how the psychologist is the one that succumbs to it over the rest of the crew?
Yeah.
I thought that was a beautiful touch of irony.
It's good as well, because at this point of filming, there were no superstar castings. Like, we look at people like now Chris Evans, who's huge because he then went on to be Captain America, but also Mr. Blue Eyes himself.
Cillian Murphy?
No, Gemma.
Sorry, did I ruin it? Oh.
One of the most finest guys, I think one of the most underrated actors of all time.
Yeah, I'm going to say it.
Yeah. He steals this film. Do you not agree? Or do you think he's... I think he's absolutely exceptional.
Yeah, he is exceptional. For me, it's Chris Evans' film, but you're right, Cillian Murphy's brilliant in it as well. Chris Evans, prior to this, I'd only seen him in a couple of films, one of which was the first Fantastic Four film,
which is, of course, dog shit.
The second one's even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was the first dramatic performance I'd seen him give, and to me, he was just another Hollywood pretty boy until I saw this. I was like, shit, this boy can act.
Yeah, he really has the chops.
Yeah, he's excellent. The whole crew, though, the whole cast play off each other so brilliantly. Mm. One of the things about Cillian Murphy, apparently, is, you know, the TV physicist Brian Cox?
Yeah, everyone loves
Brian Cox these days. Apparently, he was the scientific advisor on this film.
No.
Yeah, and he works at CERN, like the nuclear research, or, you know, all that kind of shit. I don't know, some science shit. Something to do with the Big Bang or whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently, Cillian Murphy went out and visited him working at CERN to observe him doing all this kind of stuff. And some of the ways that Brian Cox moves and behaves, Cillian Murphy took that into a performance. So it's partially based on him.
And he's kind of got the haircut for it, too.
He has, yeah. The 90s indie hair.
Yeah, or he looked like he was like a failed bassist from Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, well, because wasn't Brian Cox in and, like, wasn't he in
D-Ream? Yeah. Things can only get better.
Yeah. He's probably listens to stuff like Stone Roses, you know. Yeah.
Oh, of course he does.
And he was in a band, I think.
Yeah, he is in a band.
He is in a band still. There you go. That's how you get the
Murphy.
Look.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Also, we saw a very young Benedict Wong too.
A very thin Benedict Wong as well. Crikey.
He's been on Pizza Up.
Big time. Loves the buffet, that one.
I reckon he's the guy that goes in at 12 and stays till 3.
Yeah.
Not that we know the time.
That sounded a bit too personal there.
Oh, God. I need to sort my life out.
But overall, the cast are fantastic.
Yeah.
Rose Byrne, too.
I love her, by the way.
Oh, I love her, too.
I associate her, I think, especially now with comedies such as Bridesmaids or Spy. But she can really go for it.
Yeah.
And I would love to see Rose Byrne in more dramatic acting roles, because she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's one who pretty much started in dramatic stuff, but has pivoted to comedy recently because she's so good at it.
And she is great.
Yeah, she's excellent. I love Hiroyuki Sanada as well. He plays the Captain Kaneda.
Yes.
He's a guy who pops up in a lot of things like The Last Samurai. He was in Lost. He played Dogen in one of the seasons of Lost. I love that guy because he has such gravitas. He was the perfect choice as the captain because you just trust him and believe everything that comes out of his mouth.
It's all great. Everything about this film is so good. And what I really like about it is there's no cliche dialogue. This could easily be Armageddon. You could get the cheesy, silly lines, or the ultimate hero and the love interest of kissing goodbye as he floats off towards the sun. None of that shit. And that's what I respect for Danny Boyle. He does it how it should be, and he doesn't do the cheese factor. And that's what works for him, and that's why he's successful. To know he's now going to probably most likely go and do Bond is intriguing for me, because I've lost interest.
After the last one, which was gash.
Absolute gash. So to know he's going to do it next, I'm starting to get a bit of an interest again.
Me too. And I love Danny Boyle's direction. He can be a bit too choppy. We kind of discussed this, I think, on a recent episode. I think when we were talking about Descent, actually. I tend to not like choppy, choppy editing. I like when people just luxuriate in the images. But it seems to work for him. He has kind of an MTV music video style of direction. And it worked in this film a lot because it added to the disorientation of what was going on. And my favourite directorial choice in this film is that whenever we see Pinbacker, who's the villain, and we'll talk about Pinbacker in a moment, but Pinbacker, who comes in the end, we never see a clear shot of Pinbacker.
No.
Every shot of him is blurry or twitchy.
Yeah.
And I love that because it makes him seem more otherworldly, more untouchable, more out there.
Or even like a section of him. You never see the full body. You never see his full face. You never see his full half of his body. It's only sections of him.
Mm.
And let's be honest, he kind of looks like a naked sausage running around.
A burnt sausage.
Well, not like a dressed sausage that you normally see walking around.
Like a bow tie
suit.
And hat and tails.
I've got a top hat.
I missed a sausage.
Yeah, but it's true, though. And the fear factor increases because we don't see him. And that's better. Again, this is why we like horrors that work. Don't show us everything unless you're a porn star.
Mr. Sausage,
filth.
Sorry.
But yeah.
Gemma's still laughing about Mr. Sausage.
Hello.
I'm Mr. Sausage.
If you were going to eat sausages for tomorrow's breakfast, what brand would you have?
Walls.
Every day of the week. But Sainsbury's sausages are bloody damn good. Only if we could get that in on the Sunshine rewatch.
Anyway.
Are we going to go back to talking about Pinbacker?
Yes.
Yes. So we started this topic by saying, let's skip to the end and see what we thought about it. So the end of this film, effectively, the guys, as I've said, they find the ruins of the first Icarus mission. They go to see if they can take their nuclear missile, so they have two to work with. And they realise that there's someone still alive on this supposedly abandoned ship. And it's Pinbacker, the captain of this ship. But he is no longer a man. He is this burnt naked sausage, as Gemma said.
Hello.
And he seems to have almost supernatural powers because he appears on Icarus 1. Yeah. He then has strength where he can lift up Cillian Murphy's character and stuff. And I think that's why people don't like it.
Because
it could have been a somewhat realistic future sci-fi film, and then all of a sudden realism is thrown out of the window. And that's what people don't like.
A little bit, yeah.
But fuck it, I loved it.
I thought it was trippy as balls. I just love how the floor kind of starts melding and transforming, and then all of a sudden you think they're going to fall off, but they're walking up. It is crazy. And the way how the scenes are shot, it's quite mystifying exactly how that's done. And I think I've seen that previously in 127 Hours when James Franco's character is like cutting his arm off with a penknife. And it's very disjointed. It's very furious. It's very urgent. It's cracking. Absolutely amazing.
I just echo everything you both say. I absolutely do adore it.
Yeah.
But I am going to say that the one-star reviews I'm not against, because like Ben said, I can understand the frustration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you are sold something and not delivered what you bought. And you're not, because you see the cover, you watch the first two thirds. Remember, you're invested in about an hour and 20 minutes at this point.
Yeah.
It does shit on you.
It's true. I mean, if the Pinbacker character would have arrived within 25 minutes of the film, and then the rest of the film was him hunting down the crew, people wouldn't have blinked. But because he doesn't arrive until the final act, that's where people are like, well, this is not what I thought I was getting. And I get that. And Danny Boyle, apparently, he's compared it to one of his other films, Trainspotting. He says sometimes he likes to throw in things that throw realism out of the window, and the example he used was Trainspotting. That's a realistic, gritty film about Edinburgh smack addicts.
Just a bit.
Until Renton disappears down a toilet.
Yeah.
And that's the example he used. He said, you know, people accepted that. They know that's, you know, a bit out there, but they still love the film anyway. And that's the same thing with this. Pinbacker is this crazy fundamentalist character who wants to destroy the mission and send everyone to heaven, he says.
He does that a lot, actually. I was thinking, like, the baby on the ceiling.
Oh,
I know it's not a nice scene on Trainspotting.
Old owl neck.
But again, it takes you away from it straight away. So you're getting invested in the whole, okay, they're back on the drugs, that's happened, this is happening, so-and-so's died, and then that. Yeah, he does it a lot, actually.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Instead, you get a naked sausage running around.
Yeah.
You're obsessed with naked sausage, aren't you?
No. I'll show you one. Sorry.
And he's the guy that asked for us to be, you know, a lot more mature today.
I apologise. Talking about the visuals, one visual that I loved, and it's such a minor thing, is the gold spacesuits.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they are very bling.
Yeah, spacesuits are always normally white or grey, and they're these gold things with this eye slit. And do either of you know why the heads were designed in that way with the eye slit?
Geminos,
go on, tell them.
I do, because they drew inspiration from the character of Kenny from South Park.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
They called them the Kenny suits on set.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah. How cool is that?
Very cool.
But they look cool because there are so many films that are out there that, you know, deep space exploration type films that you need to do things that make you stand apart.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it earlier, Mark, Event Horizon. This gets compared to that film a lot, which is another film I fucking love.
Future rewatch.
Big time future rewatch. But again, you need to do things that make it stand apart. And those gold suits, never seen anything like it.
They're incredible, aren't they? I love how they glisten whenever the sun catches them. Or even towards the end when Cillian Murphy's character Kappa, he falls down and you feel the weight of the suit too. And he struggles for about a minute trying to get up, and you just think this is probably pure like metal, kind of steelish, kind of copper-esque. I don't know my metals. I wasn't very good at chemistry. What I'm trying to say, it's very heavy.
And from a technical standpoint, they also mounted cameras on the inside of the spacesuit helmets,
which
added to the claustrophobia.
He's good, isn't he?
Boyle. Oh, yeah. Boyle.
And sometimes I don't give him enough credit.
Boyle, Boyle.
Boylo. Yeah, I think we've pretty much covered it, haven't we?
I am done.
You're spent.
Yes.
Should we score it?
Yeah.
Marky Mark, you've already given 1 10 today. How are you feeling?
How are you feeling?
Go on,
do it. Do it.
A 9. I can't give 2 10s. It's an amazing film. I do like the twist. I do like the change in everything. I'm the guy on the other end, like I said. I love it. I think it's a sci-fi masterpiece. And it gave me a new respect for Danny Boyle revisiting this, which I kind of haven't got in a long time, because some of his films recently I've not cared about. But yeah, bloody good. 9 out of 10.
Fair enough. Pooch.
It's a 9 out of 10 for me too. Incredibly enjoyable, wonderful to rewatch. And I completely forgot. I forgot a lot of things since I last watched it. It's been a long old time.
Yeah.
The score is a thing of beauty. Please go listen to the score. Fall in love with the film. And I'm going to be in that section of where I love the twist and I'm sticking with my claim.
I agree with both of you. It's an absolute nine. It's a fantastic film. Danny Boyle's best work, as Mark said earlier. Bloody love it. So that gives Sunshine a skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
Oh, I'm exhausted too. I'm probably too tired to announce the next rewatch.
Is it your pick?
Yeah.
Wow, what have you got?
I'm too tired. Well, I want a film that everyone, I believe every single one of our followers have seen. Every one of our Facebook followers has seen. So we've got to go with a biggie. So Ben, Gemma, who are we going to call?
Ghostbusters!
It's now time for round two of our famous worldwide extravagant new game show.
Extravagant!
He's never used the word extravagant in his life.
I thought he was going to go somewhere else with that.
Eternal Sunshine. 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 We said sunshine too much on this episode. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Well done.
It's a homage to the incredible Mastermind, which shows on BBC One in the UK. And I think it does still show now. I'm sure it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Still popular.
Yeah.
And it's a real simple concept. Basically, each contestant, and today's contestants will be Gemma and Ben.
Hi.
Hello.
All right, we know who you are. Playing head-to-head on a specialised topic. So they have the choice to choose their topic, and they'll have 10 questions.
We have a choice now.
Yes, we'll let you. We won't just throw it at you.
Got a choice to choose.
And on the last episode, mine was big, and I scored 7. And Gemma's was...
Remember the episode, come
I
on.
I can't remember what yours was.
Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka and a Chocolate
Oh yes,
Factory.
And you scored 6.
I did.
So it's quite close, yeah. Quite close right mm-hmm. now. So who would like to go first? Like I said, there's going to be 10 questions and it's a point for each one you get right. If you get it wrong, there's no points and there's no kind of second chances. It's all or nothing on this game. Ben or Gemma?
Well, in the current world we live in, we're not allowed to be gentlemen anymore. Because we're equal now. So I'm going first, fuck you.
So, Ben, what is your specialised film?
Anchorman.
Ooh! Are you ready for your 10 questions?
Yes.
First question. What year was Anchorman released?
2004.
Correct. Who directed Anchorman?
Adam McKay.
Correct. Who is the cinematographer that also worked on Beetlejuice for Anchorman?
Don't know.
Oh, it's Thomas Anchorman.
Thomas Anchorman?
Ackerman.
Loved the film so much, he went by Deadpool.
Question 4. Which actor turned down a role in this film due to filming The Aviator, but was in the second film, Anchorman 2?
John C. Reilly.
Correct. Question 5. What is the full name of Mr. Burgundy?
Oh, Jesus. I think it's Ronald Joseph Aaron Burgundy?
Correct.
Hey!
Oh, my God!
Question 6. Which actor makes a cameo as the muck-kicking biker who changes one's life forever?
Jack Black.
Correct. Question 7. Will Ferrell plays which instrument in the film and also has played it since elementary school in real life?
Hey, Aqualung! It's jazz flute.
Correct.
Jazz flute.
What kind of animal can Ron make purr using just his soothing voice?
A wolverine.
Correct. Now it's getting tough. What time does Ron plan to make sweet, sweet love?
What time?
Yes. If he gets this, I'm going to lose my shit.
Midday.
Oh, 2 p.m. And the very final question. Can you tell me what is on Ron Burgundy's license plate?
Hashtag number one.
Correct. So, Ben, well done. You got 9 out of 10.
Pretty good.
That's not bad.
Well done, buddy.
No pressure now on you, Gemma.
That's okay. Let's see
so,
what we do.
So, Gemma, Hi. What is your film of choice?
Clueless.
It is. Are you ready for your 10 questions?
I think so.
Question 1. What year did Clueless come out?
1995.
Correct.
Mm.
Who directed Clueless?
Amy Heckerling.
Correct. Brittany Murphy plays which character in Clueless?
Ty.
It's true.
She's on a roll here.
She's doing really well.
And that's all I'm getting now.
Yeah. Which Jane Austen novel is Clueless based on?
Emma.
It's true. Oh my lord, it's this true. Is good. Who is the totally important designer Cher is wearing when she gets robbed?
Oh. Hang on. Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, famous quote boom. That we see on many memes.
Calvin Klein.
It's not, it's an Alaya.
That's because Calvin Klein's Klein. Later, yeah. It's an Alaya. But
Who is the cinematographer from Clueless, who also is from Matrix, Spider-Man 2, and Jungle Book?
Doris Day, I don't know.
It is! She was known for her cinematography.
It's Bill Pope.
That's my second choice.
The legend.
The one that is.
Oh, Popey Boy.
Question 7. What is the name of the school that Cher attends?
Oh, fuck me. It's some East Dalton or something, or I don't know. I'm just going to guess like East Dalton or something.
Bronson Alcott.
That's close. East Dalton.
Question 8. Who is Cher saving herself for?
Christian Slater.
Luke Perry. But Christian Slater's one of the options.
Oh, nuts.
Question 9. What real-life band plays at the school party?
The Mighty Mighty Bustos.
Yes, correct. Jesus. What happened to them?
Well, that really dates this film, doesn't it?
And the final question, number 10. When Murray shaves his head, mm-hmm. what does Dion threaten to do?
Call his mother.
Correct.
Nice.
That was fun.
Brilliant. 7.
Pretty
which
good.
Which is a good score.
I'm okay with that. That's cool.
So what does that put Pooch on overall?
13. So 7 and 6.
I'm lucky for some.
I'm on 7. And Ben at the moment is leading with 9.
Well done.
Oh, it's all to play for next round.
It's me versus you, pal.
I'm shitting myself already.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend. It's that point of the show where we come to you with our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too.
I love that little intro. It's probably my favourite intro.
Didn't plan that. Just
I know, it's natural.
Organic.
Organic.
It's just beautiful.
Marky Mark, what have you got?
I've gone for a book. I read it this week because I don't have a job. I get through a lot. It's called How to Get a Job. No. It's called Bossy Pants by Tina Fey.
Great book.
Thank God none of us have had it before. I'm getting to that age where I forget a lot of stuff. This book's really good, actually. A real easy read. Don't get me wrong. It's not the best book you'll ever read, but I found it genuinely funny.
Yep.
It's sweet, and I didn't realise how honest she is as a person, because when people write books, sometimes they want to come across as looking great. She doesn't care. She talks about her awkward teenage years, how she is as a mother. My favourite section was all of the mother prayers bits. It's a book I read in 2 days. It was that easy. I just sat on the sofa reading it. I absolutely love 30 Rock, so it was great to go back and hear her love and respect for Alec Baldwin, which is a great series and one of the things. I think that's where I discovered Tina Fey. But again, I like her strong opinions because she really is against the whole modelling and the kind of Photoshop stuff, which I didn't realise. She's really against, and she's all for women's rights. But I know I joke. I think she's gorgeous. She's a really, really gorgeous looking person, but she's also gorgeous as a person. Like, she's genuinely... I read it and I was thinking, I know she might be listening, dude. I really want her.
Vote.
Do you not think? It's just a heartfelt book. I sat there thinking, like, I know her. She's let me into her life. She's discussed all her issues where she faced... I really thought it was very honest of her. And if it's all true, I have so much more respect for her than I did.
Yes.
So I recommend that if you're not married, come and find me. But my recommendation is that this book is well worth your time. And it was about a 5 on Amazon. So you can't go wrong.
Yeah. She's very happily married to the guy who was the musical director on 30 Rock.
I can't compete.
No. It's a great book. I read it in a day or two as well. I remember reading it next to a pool in Tunisia a few years ago. It's a fantastic book. And the thing I really enjoyed about it was she has a scar on her face that you don't really see a lot in 30 Rock. The makeup covers it up, but sometimes in real life when she's at premieres and whatnot, you see this facial scar. And she talks about when she was a kid and, you know, what happened. I don't want to say too much about it. Really.
Yeah, okay.
Read about it, but it kind of explains how that happened and the relationship she had with her parents over this and stuff. It's a really good read.
I've never noticed a scar on her face.
You'll see it now.
Yeah. Oh, it's weird. It's one of those books where, like Ben said, I will sit there and be quite nearly close to weeping because it's so heartfelt. Mm. And then the next page, you'll lol. You'll literally sit there and laugh your ass off. Very good. Recommend. 5 out of 5.
we do out of 5 now.
Yeah, I know.
That's what we're going to start doing. 5 out of 5 for my skip to recommend.
Pooch, what have we got?
I've gone for a 6-part documentary series on Netflix.
I know what you're going to say.
Wild, Wild Country.
Yeah. I've not watched it yet, but everyone's saying it's fucking brilliant.
It is insane. It is easily the best documentary I've seen in the past 12 months. I'm finding it very difficult that something is going to top this.
Yeah.
And I got recommended by my mate whilst I was on a night out a few weeks ago, and she was telling me about this. You know, you got to see it. I think it's like a cult or something. I was like, all right, I'll see what happens. Next day, hungover as shit.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll give it a go. I'll start watching the first episode. 4 episodes later, I had to stop myself. But for those of you who have not heard about this marvellous documentary, so it's directed by Chapman Way and McLean Way. They did The Battered Bastards of Baseball, another Netflix documentary. And it tells the story of Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, later known as Osho, who is a controversial Indian guru who opened his doors to people seeking a peaceful and loving life. It's a cult, let's face it.
Your friend put it better.
Yeah. So his community grew by numbers due to Westerners coming over to India and finding themselves through his words and his teachings. Along with his right-hand woman, Ma Anand Sheela, who, I'm just going to say it, is one of the most interesting characters I have ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
You're going to love her, you're going to hate her, you're going to love her, and you are really going to hate her again. She's insane.
From the trailer I've seen, she seems like a stone-cold bitch.
Oh, massively. Like, this woman does not give any Fs whatsoever. But her and him, they decide what they want to do is they want to do the great experiment. They want to build a city called Rajneeshpuram in the state of Oregon and give the world this gift of tranquility and happiness. So they build houses, they build a school, they build a shopping mall, they build a lot of things. But I don't want to say anything more than that. The best thing to do, if you're going to watch this documentary, please do not read anything on Google. Mm. Do not read any articles, any clickbait that goes, why Wild Wild Country is the greatest documentary on Netflix at the moment. Please ignore this, because the story, you think you have an idea of how this story is going to go. You have no effing idea where this goes. It is an unrelentless train of this truth that you didn't even think could even happen or imagine it would ever get to a state of where it got.
Yeah.
It's 6 parts. The cinematography to this documentary is stunning. It's absolutely beautiful. It's what you would expect on a cinema screen with 4K. It's absolutely beautiful and spellbinding. The musical choices are second to none. They fit perfectly within the story. And it is going to be a binge-worthy documentary. Say goodbye to your life for about 6 hours, because this is 6 hours that you are going to invest in and enjoy every bloody moment of it. Yeah. Please go and watch this.
Mark, can you handle not going to Pizza Hut for 6 hours?
I don't know. How long is each episode as well? An hour?
Over an hour.
Nah.
No, seriously,
an hour will go... It will fly by. You will not even notice you've been sat there for an hour. That's 4 long, episodes, yeah. And I was like, shit, I need to get some dinner on. It was like midnight or something. So I thought, yikes. But please, you... Oh, come on.
It's 6 trips to Pizza Hut.
Oh, man.
That's how you got... Each hour is a trip to the buffet. That's how you need to look at life now.
This country.
I fucked myself over because I was looking up a little bit about this on the internet, and I kind of found out some of the things the cult did, and I was like, oh shit,
yeah.
I wish I hadn't seen it or read about it.
I'd be fine,
but I'm definitely going to watch that.
What I will say, Gemma, is on the last episode you recommended what's it called?
You were never really here.
Yeah, like my brain today.
Lynn Ramsey.
Yes, and I did watch it.
Yeah,
so there you go.
What did
you
think?
Does work. I absolutely loved it, and I now just completely echo everything you said. I just thought it was outstanding, and I don't want anyone to read into it again, because it's like nothing you could imagine. Mm-hmm. But the soundtrack by Johnny from Radiohead.
Johnny Greenwood, yeah.
My God, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Ben, I'm looking forward to when it comes out on DVD and you see it.
Oh, I will absolutely.
Your mind.
Love my man Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
He is our uncle.
Joaquin whacks in this.
Can he be our uncle?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. We've got loads of them now. Bill Murray.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm going to finish it off with a TV show, and mine is DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Ooh.
Have either of you seen this?
No.
So this was a spin-off from Arrow and The Flash. So the CW in the States, they have this stable of DC-based superhero property shows, and this was the third one. And to be honest, the first season was complete and utter dog shit. It was terrible. It was a load of C-list superheroes that they put together on a time ship, which is what it sounds like. It's a ship that can go through space and time, getting into wacky adventures. And it was just a cash grab. It was a way of expanding their DC properties. And the first season was really poor.
Oh, dear.
It was boring. It was dull. The characters weren't great. It just didn't work. It got renewed for season 2 somehow, and they course-corrected massively. So they jettisoned the characters who didn't work. They brought in new characters who were interesting. And they realised... Fucking hell, we're a load of superheroes on a time ship that can go anywhere at any time. How can this not be fun? And because of that course correction, season 2 and season 3, which is just coming to an end, have been fucking fabulous. It is without a doubt the most fun of all the superhero TV shows on. I'm not saying it's the best one. You've got fans of your Netflix shows like Daredevil and Jessica Jones. They're probably better shows, but this one is the most fun by a country mile. Season 3 especially, they've really leaned into the fun side of it, especially the time element of it. So they've gone back in time in recent episodes to hang out with or deal with Julius Caesar. They've gone back in time and hung out with a young Barack Obama. There was an episode in Season 2 where they went and met a young George Lucas. And there are always these wacky adventures they're getting into. And it's so much fucking fun. And all the cast are great. They're great actors. And they bounce off each other so well that even if the episodes are just them in the time ship talking to one another, it's such a great hangout show. They do shows that are homages to famous films. So there's one episode earlier this season which was an homage to Groundhog Day, where the time ship kept blowing up and one of the characters had to work out how to stop the ship from blowing up every hour, and that was brilliant. There was another episode that was an homage to E.T., which was great.
Now I'm sold.
There's an episode that was an homage to Coen Brothers films, and it's just they're just so wacky and so out there that there's no limits. Other shows are defined by what they are. This show has no definition. It can be whatever the fuck it wants to be on any given day. And one example of the genius of this show is, in season three, the bad guy... And I'm going to give a spoiler alert here. If you're watching the show and you haven't got this far, the bad guy in season three is an evil demon called Malice. And you never see Malice, but his voice is by an actor called John Noble, who Mark and I met, actually, at an MCM Comic-Con a few years back. And John Noble, people will know as being one of the leads in Fringe, which is one of my favourite shows of
all
time.
Great show.
And they will also know him as being one of the characters from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And so, us as fans of the show, we know this character is played by John Noble. In the show, they then go back in time to meet John Noble whilst he's filming Lord of the Rings, because they realised one of them was watching Lord of the Rings in the time ship and realised that John Noble in that film sounds like Malice. So they get him to pretend to be Malice to confuse this girl who's one of Malice's underlings. And this is how fucking weird
and
wacky.
That's crazy.
Because the show has no limits. Yeah. It's just so much fucking fun. And I have to give props to some of the actors. You've got Katie Lloyds, who plays Sarah Lance. She's the captain of the ship, and she's a badass. And I think in real life, Katie Lloyds is a martial artist, so she does a lot of her own stunts. So any fight scene with her is fucking wild, because she's brilliant and she's so cool. And then you have Dominic Purcell, who people will know from Prison Break. He plays Mick Rory, who's a former supervillain who gets conscripted onto the ship, and he's like a grumpy old bastard who's gradually, begrudgingly becoming a hero. And then you have Brandon Routh, who people will know as Superman. And after he did Superman, it was his first big role. He didn't do a lot after that. He was in Scott Pilgrim. And this is his first major sort of TV role. And he plays the Atom, Ray Palmer. And he's so much fun. He's just this big, kind-hearted nerd. Aww. And everything he says is gold. And I just love watching this show. It just warms my heart. It's so, so fucking much fun. Season 3 has just finished in the States. The final episode of Season 3 is on Sky One in the UK next week.
Awesome.
Please catch up on it. If you gave up after season one, give it another go. If you haven't seen it at all, skip season one. Jump in and watch season two and season three. So, so much fun.
Sweet.
Are you a fan?
It's all right, isn't it?
It's good as well, isn't it? Because you can get on those Sky box sets and just binge lot the lot.
Oh, and one thing I forgot to say is in season three, there have been a few guest appearances by the actor Matt Ryan playing the character of Constantine.
Oh.
And I don't know if you guys ever watched the series Constantine that Matt Ryan starred in a couple of years ago. It only lasted one season and got cancelled, which was a damn shame because it was great. So he is now back in this universe. He's appeared on Arrow a couple of times and now Legends of Tomorrow. And he's so great that in season four, he's going to become a season regular. He's going to be on the time ship. So we're never going to get season two of Constantine, but basically we are.
The next best thing.
Next best thing. Yeah, watch it. It's so much fun.
I really want to get into it now because you've sold it to me.
Talking about the next best thing, what did our social media come up with this time?
I'll tell you. Starting with Instagram, All Grips Aren't We has said, just finished Wild Wild Country on Netflix. Yay. Agrees with you, Gemma. They've said, absolutely mind-blowing, makes you think a bit differently about people involved in cults. Many are bad people, but many are people just trying to live a better lifestyle, but perhaps going about it in the wrong way.
Oh, absolutely. Beautifully put. Yeah.
Yeah. On Twitter, The Fourth Dimension, at @Mike_J_Lord, has said, love, Simon, a charming, heartwarming and laugh-out-loud funny teen movie in the spirit of John Hughes.
It's wonderful.
Is it good?
Yep,
it's like a coming-out story, isn't it?
It is, and it's completely different to what is out there for a teen film. Really, really great stuff.
Excellent, we'll check that one out. Ryan Abbott on Facebook has said, oh yes, NXT TakeOver New Orleans. Once again, not a bad match on the card. When the main WWE product churns out such dross, it's nice to know that there are still folks at that place who know how to run a proper wrestling company.
I can't disagree with Rye there.
How great was NXT TakeOver?
Unbelievable. Literally 2.5 hours of just perfection. That's why, because it's less is more. Five matches and each one delivered, not 12 matches of average crap.
Exactly. All of the matches were great, but the opening match, the ladder match, was phenomenal.
Oh.
Adam Cole, baby!
I love him.
And then the main event between Ciampa and Gargano was
wild. My God.
That's a five-star match. And it was better than Mania. WrestleMania was a disappointment in comparison.
It was very weak.
It was weak. What do you think to Rousey?
Do you know what? Like, I've knocked her for all week saying, oh, she's not ready. She's not good on the mic. She's not very good. Everything she does and doesn't sell it for me. Then she turns up on the night and literally blew me away and was the best thing about Mania.
She was the best thing about Mania. It was the best match on the card, and it is the best debut I have ever seen
in Eric wrestling. Rowan.
Other than Eric Rowan. Yeah. Big Red, of course.
Who's now champ.
Yeah. But otherwise, the card was underwhelming.
Oh,
Undertaker, ugh.
So I read somewhere about NXT, particularly that five-star match, and there was people weeping.
Yeah,
it was really, awesome.
It really brought out a lot of emotion for people.
It really did. And then the main show let it down with a fucking 10-year-old winning the tag belts.
Nicholas!
Dickolas.
But I've been there since he was back in Japan. I've supported him all his career. Yeah, you know, do you know what I mean? Not jumping on the bandwagon.
I had a Nicholas t-shirt before it was cool.
WrestleCast.
But yes, we enjoyed TakeOver very much, more so than WrestleMania itself.
And we look forward to going to SummerSlam in August.
Fuck yeah! On Twitter, Denny Different at Denny Different 2 has said, Bill Hicks, Agent of Evolution by Kevin Booth. Booth was one of Hicks's best friends, and the book covers everything from being in teenage bands to the height of his career and untimely death. A tough read towards the end, but honest and fascinating.
Oh, I miss him.
I really want to get that. I've got like five Bill Hicks books, and this isn't one of them.
Jeez.
So I
get on it.
One of the funniest men to ever live.
Mm-hmm. I do genuinely miss him every day.
Died too young. On Instagram, that Joe Myers has said, Barry on HBO, starring Bill Hader as a hitman tired of killing, who gets the acting bug when he stumbles upon an acting class during a recon for a hit. It's been a delight over the first three episodes. Now, we haven't had this in the UK yet. It starts on Sky Atlantic next week, so I've not seen any of the episodes, but I'm really looking forward to it because I fucking love Bill Hader.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I've heard lots of positive reviews about this too. Yeah. I think this, along with Silicon Valley, has just been renewed for another season.
Yes.
And it's Bill Hader. I'm going to get in there.
Oh, and another thing about Bill Hader. I read this a couple of days ago. He's in talks to play the adult version of Finn Wolfhard's character in the It sequel.
I'd buy that.
Which would be amazing.
Yeah.
And Professor X, what's his name?
Oh, James McAvoy.
James McAvoy is in talks to play the adult version of the lead lad.
Wow.
Bill. Yeah.
I'd see both of those work and get Corey Feldman involved.
Always.
That's all we need.
Yeah. And Sean Astin. The whole crew. But Jessica Chastain's already in. Yep. So,
she's perfect casting.
It too's going to be fucking marvellous, isn't
it?
On Twitter, Aaron C. at Aaron J. Conroy has said, been watching Dexter for 4 months now, on the penultimate season. Very strong and interesting show. Excellent acting and character development. Right. I don't mean to piss on your chips, Aaron, but watch the final season and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
Come back to me then.
The very last episode is one of the biggest disappointments since Alton Towers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vote.
On Facebook, Graham Ginty has said, Graham Rawls' Woman's World, simply one of the greatest achievements in modern novel writing. From idea to execution, it's just a marvel. It's a book constructed completely out of 40,000 cut-out pieces of text from women's magazines. It works as a brilliantly pacey thriller that ends up being equally exciting as it is moving.
That took a lot of work, I bet.
Yeah, Gemma is our resident woman. Have you
Hello.
Heard of this?
I have not, but I will certainly delve into it as a female.
Yes.
Tell us if it's any good, and then us men folk might have a listen. Dan Rhodes 76 at Bodney 76 has said, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, currently on Sky Atlantic. It's really good. It's a documentary about Gary Shandling, who you will know as the star and creator of The Larry Sanders Show.
Nice.
It's a wonderful documentary about his life and untimely death. And it was directed by his good friend and mentee, Judd Apatow.
It's annoying this, because all these people suggest great stuff. And I have my week planned of Pizza Hut and watch certain things. And it makes me think, like, that sounds great. So now I need to do it. And now this box set that's on Sky. It's too much stuff.
Too much stuff.
Honestly.
Too much content out there, isn't it?
Stop.
Simon Armstrong on Facebook has said, Bosch. It's about a relentless LA homicide detective, Harry Bosch, played brilliantly by the glorious Titus Welliver. This is a no-thrills, gritty cop drama which keeps you on the edge of your seat until the season finale. Have any of you watched Bosch?
No.
I want to start saying Bosch in my everyday terminology.
Bosch.
I bet Ben's watched it and he boshed through them all.
I've seen the first three seasons. Season four has only just come onto Amazon a few days ago, so I've not watched season four yet, but I'm a big fan of the first three seasons. It's a great cop show.
You've well and truly boshed yourself.
Big time.
Enough boshing. I'm sick of boshing.
And then finally on Instagram, Andrew Moores has said, I keep telling you the Kingslayer Chronicles, but you just ignore me. Now, Andrew has said this for the last few episodes, and the reason why I've not read it out is because I Google the Kingslayer Chronicles and I can't find anything. There's nothing there.
Oh.
But I found something called the King Killer Chronicles.
Oh.
So if that's what you mean,
correct. Chuck Norris.
Thank you.
Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. So if that is what you're talking about, there you go. You've had your
shout out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. See, we acknowledge everyone eventually. Shouldn't you're not just always going to get it acknowledged straight away. Sometimes you have to wait.
Sometimes the complaints will be false. So if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to send us any of your shout-outs or answer any of our quizzes or give us anything for Skip to the Recommend or Movie Masturbate or whatever you want, get us on Twitter at STTEPodcast or facebook.com/SkipToTheEndPodcast, Instagram at SkipToTheEndPodcast, or you old-school mama jammers like me, podcast@SkipToTheEnd.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And a good time was had by all.
Good times indeed.
So tired. So yeah, it all knackered. Feels like a day's work now. And I don't know what that is anymore. Yeah. So I'll be honest. I don't think I've brought my A game today and I'm exhausted. So I apologise to all of the listeners.
Yeah.
And I will make sure that on the next episode I bring my A game.
Even if you thought Mark didn't bring his A game. BritishPodcastAwards.com/votes.
Votes.
Yeah, please vote as a sympathy. Before we go, we've had a really good tweet come through this week and I wanted to share it with you both. So Ross Miller has come online and said, what are your favourite songs from a movie that you heard for the first time watching that film? And I thought, do you know, that's a real thinker. So sorry to put you on the spot, guys,
yeah.
But while you think, shall I tell you mine? And
that gives
you a bit of time to think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I remember the very first time I watched, and this is, you know that film that we based our quiz name on? The old...
Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine
of Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
Beck covered Everyone's Got to Learn Sometime, which is a beautiful rendition
gorgeous.
Of that song.
Yeah.
A what of that song?
Cover of that
song. No. say what you said.
What did I say?
No,
I'm not going to
say it. Say it again.
I can't even remember.
You said rendition.
Oh.
There's no M in rendition.
So, yeah, he covered that song, and I've heard that song so many times, and so many people have done it, but Beck does it the best, I think. I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we talked about this in the early days. There's a film that's called Singles.
Yeah.
And Pearl Jam are in it, and they do State of Love and Trust. Considering I'm one of the biggest Pearl Jam fans around, it was used off a, like, outtake for one of the albums. And since then, from hearing that song, I will put it out there now, it's my favourite ever Pearl Jam song.
Wow.
And you can only get it on like the best of album now.
Big
I think
words.
It was outtake from 10. And it's called State of Love and Trust.
Mm.
So go and Google it. Go and Spotify it. Amazing.
Spotify.
He's been on the bottle.
He's a dosser and a dwad.
So I've thrown you completely and on the spot. Gemma,
okay.
Have you got a couple?
I do. Do you remember the first time you watched Donnie Darko? And we loved that scene at the high school. And Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels starts playing. That was the first time I'd ever heard the song. And I was like, what is this witchcraft? So I didn't have Google at the time because I was young and, you know, I was much, much younger than I am now. And I managed to find out what it was. And I was obsessed with the song. So I absolutely adore that.
If you didn't have Google, you should have used Encarta. Did you have Encarta on CD-ROM?
Ask Jeeves.
Old school.
Jeeves didn't know the answer either. I also adore Air's Playground Love, found on The Virgin Suicides by Sofia Coppola. And, all right, and again, I watched Boogie Nights when I was like 14 years old, and this was the start of my obsession with film. And when the credits are rolling right at the end, ELO's Living Thing plays. And again, it blew my tiny little mind because I'd never heard anything like that. It was so different to what I would normally associate songs of the 70s. And when I found out my mum and dad had like LPs, they had cassettes, they had CDs of ELO, I got on the ELO train. I was a fully paid monthly member of the ELO train.
Would you say you're on the EL locomotive?
Oh my lord.
Come on now.
This is good.
That's good stuff.
Yes, Ben.
So much value for money from this podcast. This is insane.
Vote.
Ben, what have you got?
The only one I can think of is a song from the late 60s. And the first time I heard it was on Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's called White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
Yeah, and I'm obsessed with that song now, and I hadn't heard it until that film came out. Like, the whole psychedelic rock of Jefferson Airplane had completely passed me by. But that song is brilliant, and it just builds to this crescendo, builds to this final refrain. And it works perfectly in the scene as well, because it's when Benicio Del Toro's character's in the bath and he wants him to throw the toaster into the bath as it hits the song's peak, because he's tripping off his tits, of course. Great scene, great film, great fucking song.
I really want to listen to that on my way home. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Get on Spotify.
I will do.
Spotify Premium.
Spotify.
Available now for
$9.99. Spotify.
Good work, guys.
Yeah.
What else should we talk about?
Let's go home. Oh, wait, no. There's one other biggie that we've not discussed. Secret fucking cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Ben's first ever time of going, I believe.
Indeed. I'd never been to one of these events before. You two are veterans.
I'm a veteran, yeah.
Yeah. Let's throw it to Pooch first, because Mark and I went together. Pooch went separately. Shame. And Mark and I went as press, so we had full access. You went as a jobber who had to pay.
Yeah, you probably didn't get the full access that we got, because we got food, we got drinks, we got the full VIP, interactive
mate.
Extra.
VIP.
Yeah, bigger seats.
Well, so go on, Pooch. Sorry. Thoughts?
What was it like being a peasant?
Oh, fuck off. Wow. Every year I always say to myself, that was better than last year. And I do truly believe when I say this is the best secret cinema I've ever been to. It grabs you straight away as you're walking into the actual building itself. You know, you've got actors that are pretending to be, you know, like checking your papers.
Yeah.
The interesting thing was my character was a replicant and my partner's Greg's, just call him Greg. Everyone knows Greg now.
Fiance.
My fiance and I, we went. He was like a Tanner House industrialist, so he got preferential sort of, you know, like seeing to his, oh, are you okay? Oh, yeah, well done. Good job on the job or whatever. And I was treated like absolute dirt.
Yeah.
I got kicked to the side, you know, it's like, give me your papers now. Come on, get out of my way. And with Greg, they're like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, I'm like, fuck you.
Because he's a man.
Yeah, because women are dirty.
You said it.
There we go.
To those who are going, wear a Mac. Bring an umbrella.
Yes.
Do not bring heels, because you will not get anywhere.
Yeah.
But the whole experience was so immersive and so alive, and it really captures the essence of what makes Blade Runner such a beautiful film. Incredible. I really did lose myself into this whole world, and bravo, Secret Cinema, you've done it again.
Yeah.
I can't really echo much, because I don't want to reveal too much that happened, because it's Secret Cinema, but it is the best one I've seen yet. It made the film come to life. I need a Mac because I was sat next door to Ben. Nothing to do with the rain or anything. I was sat by him thinking he's going to...
Leave it
he's
there.
He's going to spill his drink because it's that good.
Okay.
And I just enjoyed the fact that it was Ben's first experience. And I just sat there going, oh, man, look at him. He's loving it. Because it's something you might... I think it is genuinely. You'll love it. You'll, you know, embrace the experience. Or you'll think, I'm not up for this. I'm going home.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't dress up because I don't do dress up, as you well know. So we just went in black. We just went all in black. So we kind of fitted in. Because of the ethos of that film, the costumes, that kind of worked. If we'd have gone to a Star Wars one all dressed in black, we'd have looked fucking idiots. But it worked. And I did love the fact that there were so many people really getting involved in it. Not just the people who are visiting as patrons, but also the staff.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they get paid or if they're volunteers or what, or just filling out their acting reel at their local fucking drama schools.
Yeah.
But they were really into it, weren't they? There was a guard where Mark went up and asked this guard, you know, where do we actually watch the film? And the guard was like, what film? You know, the film that we're here to see. I don't know what you're talking about, film. He would not break character.
And I was like, dude, I'm from press, because I had this like little light-up badge to show I was press. Yeah. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, fair play.
Yeah. But it was so cool. Like, again, we don't want to give away too much, but when you're walking around there and it felt like you were on those streets of 2019 Los Angeles and all the little noodle bars and all that kind of stuff. And the food was good.
Yeah. Did you have the noodles?
Well, we had the burgers.
Oh, noodles were good.
Did you pay for your food?
Yeah.
And we didn't.
Press.
I managed to get to sit down. I actually felt like Rick Deckard.
Yeah.
Just sitting there, eating my noodles. Everything that seemed to have happened, we were in the right place at the right time when everything sort of kicked off.
Yeah.
And it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The scale of it is insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We can't talk too much.
I know.
Maybe in a few months we'll do a bit more talk about actually what happened. I know a lot of our listeners were like, I'm going in May and June. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But we had a good time.
It was great fun.
Yeah.
I thoroughly bloody enjoyed it. I would go again, but only for something where I love the film and don't have to dress up and can get away with just wearing black trainers.
Alien.
Yeah, something like Alien, I'd go again.
You realise that probably next year they're going to announce for Forrest Gump.
Fuck that shit.
Get to go to Jenny's house.
That'd be awful. Mac and me would work. It would. You go into a McDonald's, you order some food, aliens attack you, Coca-Cola everywhere.
Aliens, though, aliens would work. I think Jurassic Park, you could make that work as well.
I think Jurassic Park would be a really good one. I think they've done Aliens about 8 or 9 years ago.
I think they did Alien, didn't they?
They did the first one. They didn't do the second one.
So let's do Aliens.
Or Prometheus. That would be good.
Yeah.
Just anything. Just do it soon.
Yeah. But it was fantastic.
Right, let's talk about the next episode.
Shouldn't have to.
It's a big one.
What is our main review?
Forgot. Some little independent film.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is it Avengers?
Infinity Wars or something?
Yeah, something like that. It'd be
something
all right.
Along
yeah.
those lines.
Marvel's latest.
It's going to be absolutely tremendous. It's going to be Avengers Infinity War, which is pissing all over the pre-sales that Black Panther had, and Black Panther broke records, so yeah. It's going to be a worldwide smash. And by God, I'm pretty excited. Yeah. I'm trying to underplay it.
Yes.
I'm pretty excited. Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We are going to be masturbating over Ms. Julianne Moore.
Wow.
Mm.
One of my top five actresses of all time.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah. Should be a good one then.
So I'm tremendously looking forward to all of that.
Lovely.
Gemma, what's our topic of conversation?
We're going to be talking about our top three redemptions. So those of you who missed the beginning bit, where were you? But basically, it's an ultimate face turn.
Yes.
So characters that were a little bit unsavoury at the start of the film, and by the end of it, they've got their glory, they've got their moment, they've redeemed themselves.
Love it. Mark, what's our rewatch?
It's only Ghostbusters, the original. It's going to be good.
Ghostbusters!
Should I just use that as the intro music?
Yeah, just use all of that.
I can't wait to revisit that. I mean, the latest one was great, and it wasn't, but I love the original. It's absolutely amazing. And we can get to talk about Rick Moranis again.
And we'll, of course, have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you all our pop culture recommendations of the week. We'll be giving away some great prizes, and we're going to have the final round of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind. Oh. And it's me versus Marky Mark. Gemma, you are the quiz master, aren't you?
Quiz mistress? I can go for either one. I'll respond to a lot of things.
Go for mistress. I like that.
Just quiz makes mistress. Me think of like a whip or something. Sorry, I'm going off topic.
Too dirty.
Yeah. So the scores are, Mark, you got 7, I got 9.
Mm. Yeah, hang on. Let me just think about this.
Yeah.
So you got, I think I've ballsed up. You got 2 wrong. I remember the cinematographer that one. You're an 8.
You said I got 9 though, didn't
what?
You?
I've just thought, now you got 2. Oh. I know what will happen. I'll listen back and then I'll think, shit, so let's go with 8.
All right,
it makes
fine.
It more, you know,
yes, better,
for.
Better for the listeners. Better for the listeners.
Awesome.
Yeah, and plenty of great prizes as well. Although I thought we weren't going to do prizes.
Do you know what? As it's a good skip to the end and everyone's loving us and posting pictures and stuff, let's do another few years worth of competition.
Yeah.
That sounds good
a
to me.
A few years worth of prizes guaranteed.
That sounds good.
See you in 2 weeks.